So Isha Upanishad ki.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this and I realized I'd rather read the Krishna book than Isha Upanishad. But again, it's a part of last night we had this PowerPoint show of all of Prabhupada's books. So Isha Upanishad fits into the whole schema of different things. And of course certain people may be very attracted to it. Yeah, maybe very useful. And again, the perspective that it was, first written as part of Back to Godhead magazine, so it's like understanding, why Prabhupada wrote it, what circumstance. Myself, I see a lot of variety in Prabhupada's purports. For example, like the very last purports in the 10th canto before Prabhupada left, that is so lucid. Because Prabhupada had no preoccupation for management, for his body, for anything. It was just those purports were just like glass or something. It's so lucid. Other times, he's saying, we should worship Krishna alone, not even Ram or Shringa, only Radharani, not even Chandravali. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, I don't even want to hear the name Chandravali, and so on. And other times, Prabhupada says, even the smarta Brahmins are okay. the smarta Brahmins, they're okay. So there is a lot of mood in Prabhupada's preaching. And so, Prabhu was saying, that the Mahamantra doesn't occur. And also the name of Lord Chaitanya we saw, but it's kind of like put in there. So it seems definitely for a certain kind of people. So according to our afterwards, the dog running after Srila Prabhupada. We have the first text in Om Purnam Adaya. Of course, the introduction is a wonderful, complete essay on epistemology. It's a very nice summary. Somebody asks you, do you have a biography of your acharya, Lord Chaitanya? You say, yes. Introduction to Srimad Bhagavatam. Do you have an essay on your epistemology and your culture? Yes. Here it is. Do you have a summary of your social philosophy? Where's that? All of our political science, and maybe about 2 or 3 pages.
Invocation.
No? Instructions of Bhishma Dev to use here. Those two purports probably supposed to everything. So nice like that. So this is preaching, being able to find things and give to people. So the first the beginning, Om Purnamadaya Purnamidam, Ishavashamidam Sarvam. We're identifying those as being how to live this world, how to adjust to karma, those kind of things. And today we're going to talk about texts 4-8. And here we're thinking this talks more about about what is this world, details, the Paramatma, the Virat Rupa, and within that, the living entities in general. And so we can chant verse number 4. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. One point, this Vishnu is actually a devotee from Los Angeles called Chaisaki. he was the artist used his face for that. And someday you'll also consider a partial incarnation of Vishnu. Okay, 1-4.
Aneja ekamaso dario naina deva abhava purvam arsa tadhavatonya natyaki tinsa tasmin aho matari sardaki.
Let's do 5 also. You see them fit together. Number 5.
Tadeja ijan naijaki tadure tadyantike Kalantarasya sarvasya Tadru sarvasya sarvayaha.
So we see Prabhupada translating tat as this Supreme Lord. And we also, before the mantra 4, we have, Enat as this Supreme Lord. So again, these are very, very esoteric translations. The whole thing is very much, speaking very generally about the absolute truth and things like that. Very slowly deal with people who are afraid of personality. So mantra 4, I guess I have, yeah. although fixed in his abode, the personality of Godhead, is swifter than the mind and can overcome all others running. The powerful demigods cannot approach him, although in one place he controls those who supply the air and rain. He surpasses all in excellence. So here's some more about Matarishva, the gods who control the wind and rain. That's that. Yeah. So we're still talking about this controlling feature, Ishvara. If you go to our study guide now, there's so many mistakes in this thing. You know, when I'm reading it, I want to change things. But it's nice though, because you can disagree with things in here. Actually, when I publish the next time, I'll comment there are probably about 55 different mistakes in this. Try and find them, like that. So I'm trying to. Where are we? Page 12, right? Okay. So I didn't write a lot of comments, a lot of notes, because the idea was I wanted people to start taking their notes, making their comments. Okay. So actually, all we have in the fourth one, pretty much at this point, that this fourth mantra clearly suggests his personal features, like that. And it's a fact. Before that, the Ishvara is not suggested. But here we're starting to talk about it in terms of his personal features. Before it's talking about the jiva, mostly the jiva, and his becoming free from karma, becoming this kind of relationship. But now it's really starting to talk about the Supreme Lord as a person. And again, we understand this is for people who are very intellectual, but they don't have much comprehension of God as a person or things like that. Albert Einstein, he glorified the Vedas. He said, they're very intelligent, I like this kind of idea about Brahman. And they said, do you believe in a personal God? He said, no, I definitely do not believe in a personal God. Some people say I do, but I don't. I want to make that clear. But he pretty much, he said, didn't believe in a personal God, because all the different religions he met, they were trying to make God into something you could exploit or like that. It was very materialistic. So he didn't like that kind of idea about God. But he liked the Vedas and the idea of Brahman, like that. So this is a good book for Albert Einstein. So we have about, how many? I call it, I think it's seven.
Seven paragraphs?
Yeah, like that. And, he probably starts off, through mental speculation, even the greatest philosopher cannot know the Supreme Lord, who is the absolute truth. He can be known only by his devotees, through his mercy. So Prabhupada quotes the Brahma Samhita, how the non-devotees can travel at the speed of the mind and still won't quote and catch him. Then he quotes the Brahma Samhita again, how the absolute personality of God is always in his abode, but he, by his inconceivable potencies, he can know things. And then Prabhupada also quotes the Vishnu Purana about the same argument like that. So it's a very fundamental point, to appreciate like that. If I take a stick and I'm hitting somebody like that, right? And he says, why are you hitting me? And I say, I am not hitting you. The stick is hitting you. Like that. It's okay? So this is the point about Krishna and his energies. If I take even one little hair on your body and take some tweezers and start to pull on it, right? You become conscious, right? So what are the hairs of the universal form? The garot root. What are the hairs? And also even the herbs. The grass, the herbs are his hairs. So even if you're pulling out one little plant, and Krishna's, what is that? I say, pulling on my, So Krishna's conscious, so conscious of all the things that happen in his environment. And even if we insult one little plant and cause damage to one little plant, then Krishna's conscious of that, right? There's going to be a reaction like that. So this is the point that, I think it's a point that occurs again and again here, that we have to understand this point of a chitta veda veda tattva. Some point is occurring a lot in these verses like that, this way I was reading it. It's a big point, a very, very big point, how to understand Krishna and his energies. And here is approaching it like in a very intellectual fashion like that. In the Christian tradition, for example, which I know, in one place in the Bible it says, Jesus Christ is talking, I and the Father are one. And the Greek is homo nuclei. But you can also say homo nucleus. Now one way it means I and the Father are the same person. The other way it means I and the Father are of the same quality. So they have big battles over these things. Sometimes they have wars, you know, fighting over these changes, these things. And their final conclusion was that whatever it is, you know, reality, we're not going to change the scripture one iota. You know, the letter I. Greek is called iota. So it says homo nuclei, and even though it means homo nucleus, we're not going to change the scripture even one iota. So in English, it's a phrase, like you tell somebody, here's what I've written on this topic, and don't change it one iota, like that. So it comes from this particular historical event like that. And I don't know what the conclusion was. What was it, that Jesus Christ is God, or Jesus Christ is the same quality as God, but it shows that it was a very important point to them. And so many things like that. There's actually every year in the United States, there's one movie by Franco Zaffirelli or something. It's about Jesus Christ. They show it at Easter time, which is a big festival. All the whole nation. It's very good, actually, really good. The person who plays Jesus is like, he could be. It's really intense. And you can't tell if he's half mad or if he's saintly. It's just like, you can see how it was then. Is Jesus a madman or is he the Son of God? He was doing all these strange things. So finally in the history, they drug him into the court like at 1 o'clock in the morning when his friends weren't there, because he had some friends on the high court, and they made sure they weren't there. The head priest was an actor named Anthony Quinn. You know, he's a really heavy guy like that. You know. So he was Caiaphas, the head priest. So Jesus is drug in there. You know, he's been beaten up a little bit. He's barely standing up. He's tied up. Then all the little demons like this, they start criticizing his followers. They ate corn on the codicil. You know, they didn't wash their mouth after they had lunch. You know, so all these crimes, you know. And Anthony Quinn is sitting there, like, looking at him, staring. You know, he finally raises his hand, like that, you know. And all the little demons become quiet. And he says, you're all missing the point. Oh, yeah, what's that, you know? He says that he's the Son of God. They go, oh yeah, I guess if you're the Son of God, you can, you know, eat corn and cuss. You know, okay. So he says, Jesus of Nazareth, I ask you, are you the Son of God? You know. So Jesus quotes some scripture, which basically says, yeah. You know. So Anthony Quinn, this is like the tsunami or something. He's just like, he stands up, he has this heavy tunic on, a heavy tunic, he just rips it open. He says, God is one. You know, out, like that, you know. No, God cannot incarnate. God is one. He's a substance. Actually, one of the most famous Jewish philosophers is Maimonides. He wrote a thing called Guide to the Perplexed. It's about maybe 18th century or something like that. And he said, not only is God impersonal, God must be impersonal. Right? He's always one step ahead of you. So it's a big thing understanding this point. And our point is Chinta Veda Veda Tattva, that Krishna's energies, yes, Mayatatati Namasarvam Jagaravyakta Mortina Nastani Sarvutanam Nacharam Tesh Vatataha. And this verse in Bhagavad Gita supports this idea. By his energies, he's everywhere. But then Prabhupada says in one of the purports, right, don't think that he's become, you know, lost by sending his energies everywhere, then he won't be anything. This is also what Schrodinger, Big Nobel laureate, physicist. He said the same thing. He said that, you know, we're all part of the universe. You can throw yourself down the ground and realize I'm one with it all, like that. So on. So he was also a materialistic pantheist on this point. It was a big point, arguing this point. And here Prabhupada is trying to make this point that Yusupanishad tries to establish that Prabhupada says, well, you know, if the absolute truth wasn't a person, then why is it spending so much time discussing his personal features like that? He has hands, but he has legs, but he has an abode, but, you know, it's why is it spending all this time talking about these, making the contrast like that? My comprehension reading this is that for the most part, these purports are written for these kind of people who have these kind of criticisms. They're not exactly written for us. We already accept all these things. But these kind of people who are going to read the Yusuf Upanishad and have this kind of understanding, this kind of, yeah, they're open-minded, but the Prabhupada is writing for them. You know, why does he mention so many things? And he's saying, well, yeah, it's a fact.
Why these people are so adamant against the personal nature of the Lord?
Because
they get out of that.
Because then, you know, all the, you know, God has a right. Prabhupada says this many times here, right? Krishna is enjoying all the things we aspire to enjoy. As I say, it was shocking me. I read that. He says it. Krishna aspires to enjoy all the things we aspire to enjoy: good food, good drinking, right? Nice dancing with pretty girls. You know? So if he's, you know, if he's a person, you know, then I can't have all these things, right? They all go to him like that. You know? Aldous Huxley, Darwin. He was Darwin's protagonist, the guy who spread Darwin's philosophy. Is it Aldous Huxley? No. Is it Thomas Huxley, Julian Huxley, and Aldous Huxley? No? Thomas Huxley, okay. he said, Darwin's philosophy made it possible for us to have sex without guilt. And that's why it was so popular. You know, because people always feel guilty about God and all these kind of things. But now, if there is no God, we can have all the sex we want and not feel guilty about it. So that's basically it. Yeah. One big Mayavadi statement is that in this lifetime, Durga is my mother. Mommy, give me this, give me that, give me this, give me that. But in my next lifetime, she'll be my wife. Yes, we bring the body act. Another one, this is Baba Ram Das. He met, what's the guy? Nim Karoli Baba. You know him in Vrindavan? Yeah, he's. If you do the parikrama in Vrindavan, just before you come back and cross the road to Mathura, on the right side is a big Hanuman, like that, you know, near the Dauji Mandir, and there's a big Durga. That's his tomb. I'm not sure if it's Samadhi or not. But he was a big mystic. He did all kinds of weird things, you know. Anyway, whether he was a Mayavadi or not, his disciple was, you know, Henry Alpert, Baba Ram Das. He was talking about the philosophy, about how, you know, understanding all these things and duality in this world and different elements and things like that. And it's very interesting. But maybe in 1972 or something. It was very interesting. And he said, finally you come to the point of the ultimate duality. And at that point, it disappears. And there's a kind of barrier, you know. And no one knows what's beyond that. But you have to have a guru to take you through. Like that, you know. And so he said, my guru has gone through. And now my guru is having sex with every part of the universe at every moment. He's having sex with a microphone. He's having sex with his nose. He's having sex with the table. He's having sex with the students. He's having. But that's, you know, that was his idea. So there's like a lot of followers too. Yeah, wow. Sex with the universe. Of course, as we were discussing yesterday, I mean, this guru is probably becoming an amoeba. But that's why, you know, I mean, Kirtananda Swami said, Kirtananda Prabhu, he said when Prabhupada was first preaching in the West, they thought that the Mayavadis were some kind of small, obscure group in India that had really bothered Prabhupada, like when he was in India, or he personally, you know, gave a hard time, he had this grudge against them or something. After some time, they realize that we are the Mayavadis. When you get down to it, we have this thing about, you know, wanting to depersonalize God and remain people. It's a very kind of science is based upon this. The whole universe is impersonal, but somehow or other, I'm a person and I can control it. Right? Yeah, become master of the universe. So, yeah. Any comments, anybody else? Kind of go through section by section. Yeah.
Hello? No?
Okay. One question. Pantheism is God is everything, or there are many gods?
How is it translated in Hindi? Yeah. It's translated as Bahudevavad or Ishwaravad. So it's a little confusing. Pan means across, And theism means deity. So even Prabhupada uses the two senses like that. In the first chapter of the second canto, in the first step in Vaporization, we're talking about Virat Root meditation. Prabhupada says, and this is pantheism, and he says, without a devotional attitude, it won't have much effect. But if you have a devotional attitude on it, then it's okay. Like that. So if we see, you know, ecology, we see everywhere the spirit and nature, and there are many people, demons, who accept ecology because you realize this is a better way to exploit nature. You know? We'll understand her secrets and we can exploit her more. But other people, they say, no, let me understand nature so I can serve her and take shelter of her. Then pantheism has a good aspect like that. So I think it applies in Sanskrit both ways too, as in English. It means many gods, many devatas, Indra, Varuna, but it also means Paramatma, heading towards Paramatma. Brahman, Virat Rup, like that. And the second step in God realization is is Paramatma. And the third chapter then is change in heart. So it's pantheism, mysticism, monotheism. Many times when we're discussing with people, the first thing you gotta do is find out what the words mean to them. Because some of them may say pantheism, but what does it mean, like that. So it's just a lot of times this first thing about is clarifying the language before you can actually have a philosophical discussion. So if I'm talking forever here. The Bhaktivedanta Institute, which is dealing with scientists, and scientists pretty much fall in this category to many degrees like that, especially the bigger ones. So Prabhupada said the preaching program for these people was the first thing. You should have very nice reception, very beautiful building with good furniture and pretty girls receiving them and taking their hats and, oh, professor so-and-so, please sit down. The other Nobel laureates are in there taking tea. And first thing like that is you have to, and maybe it's very on the street to meet somebody, but you give a very nice reception, like, oh, hello, sir, how are you? And, oh, it's good to see you. It's a great opportunity for me. And that, Lord Chaitanya with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Lord Chaitanya with Prakashananda Saraswati, the same thing. He gives them all respect and like that. Okay, it's the first thing. The second thing is nice prasad. So, Bhaktivedanta Institute sit there with beautiful chairs, with a beautiful table, and very nice lunch. Your body tastes what you eat for hours afterwards. I heard that 5 years ago, I was thinking, it's a fact. For about 5 hours, 3 hours, 2 hours after you eat, you're just feeling whatever it was. It was nasty, you feel bad, So we have breakfast, these programs, coffee break, lunch, coffee break, dinner. And you can see that by taking prasadam, people's consciousness becomes fine, like that, And then finally, Prabhupada says, then you discuss philosophy. Like that. Then. Because before that, they can't possibly comprehend philosophy. Biggest Nobel laureates, these guys are smoking and everything else. They can't understand anything. So then, one time, Bhakti Sridhamana Maharaj was with Prabhupada in the gardens in Los Angeles, nice garden there. And he brought one friend, his name now, he's an internationally famous astrophysicist from the University of California. But he also writes science fiction, like that. I remember his name. Anyway, he came there, and he was sitting, probably sitting in this, on his asana, and the professor came in, sitting there, and a few devotees, a couple of sannyasis. And Prabhupada started to talk to him, oh, hello, glad to meet your friend, he's from the university. And Prabhupada was making certain philosophical points like this, and his professor was arguing, he wasn't accepting, he wasn't being rude, but he was arguing, Prabhupada was accepting his argument, going back and forth, and he wasn't accepting much, So then finally, it was Sunday, they brought a big plate of Mahaprasadam in for Prabhupada, big, all very nicely arranged, to put it in front of Prabhupada. And Sridhamana Maharaj, the scientist, was like looking at it, like, wow. And Prabhupada pushed it towards him and said, this is for you. So he started eating, And then Prabhupada started talking about, friendly things, why I came to America, and I was actually impressed. He said, everything's basically the same, except your squirrels in America. You know how your squirrels are much stouter than anything. And so the man was actually having a good time. And then Prabhupada told Maharaj, take your friend to see the Arctic. So he said, the professor went, Bentley? He's Bentley. To see the arti and the kirtan and so many devotees, Sri Pujari, he was really impressed. It was nice, you know. They were coming back to Prabhupada's room again. There was a plate of eggplant balarams, tomatoes with curd. Somebody had put it kind of hidden on the shelf, and he said the professor just took the whole thing and started eating it. He said he was amazed because he'd already eaten so much prasadam. So he got back into Prabhupada's darshan, sat down, and he said, Marsha said, now Prabhupada started making exactly the same points. And now what to speak of accepting them, the guy was coming up with scientific evidence to support them. So he said, this is what Prabhupada was showing me. This is how you preach to these people. And so, same way, his Upanishad, everything else, it's very rare a person who can, on this intellectual level, like that. But then, nice prasad, everything else, then these big brains. I mean, you ask these people, how many languages do you speak? Well, they say the ordinary, 12, 13. It's a fact. We went to one of these congresses, and it was the International Congress on the History of Science and Technology. And all these big, heavy people there. It was around every 4 years they had it. And the organizing committee was trying to plan the next meeting, which was going to be like 4 years in the future. And they were talking away, and we had to talk with one person there who was Professor Capoletti, who was a self-made millionaire. He was a professor of the history of science at the University of Roma. Tall guy with a big nose, like that Roman, you know. We had to talk to him after the thing. And he was the guy who was counting the votes. Everybody was voting, he was counting 1, 2, 3, you know, two guys counting the votes. You know. And so then about halfway through this thing, the organizing committee meeting, about 35 people, the Russians couldn't keep up with the English, so the chairman just changed to French without even asking anybody. Just changed to French, and everybody started talking French like that. You know. So they, you know, I felt like a mosquito, these guys. Literally, 12 languages is not at all uncommon for them. But they start discussing these philosophical concepts, they can't understand anything, you know. As soon as we finished this meeting, we went outside, and Dr. Capoletti said, Damodar Swami, you're not in your sacred robes now, so please forgive me. He took a cigarette. He's like, such tension like that. He said, if you're in your robes, I wouldn't smoke. So, you know, probably he's very philosophical, very high. In some ways, only in India, my people like this. They're very rare to discuss this, or devotees like that. Go on here? Okay. So Prabhupada discusses the first paragraph, these different points about the energies expanding. And he says, all of these energies are innumerable. They can be divided into three principal categories. Have you heard this before? Yeah, it's not new. My book is Nectar of Instruction. So there is discussed. It's introduced. Actually, there's one verse, Sanskrit verse, in the 11th or 10th or 11th text, where the actual Sanskrit's there. The Sanskrit verse is Vishnu Shakti Paraprokta Chetragnatyam, like that. The Vishnu has three energies. Okay. The internal, the marginal, and the external. There are hundreds and millions of subcategories to each of these categories, like that. So in our study guide, I asked, peanut butter is actually a subcategory of the external, the Bahiranga Shakti. Is peanut butter Bahiranga Shakti or Jiva Shakti? Okay, what about sprouts?
If they're sprouted.
Yeah, because sometimes it's a combination like that. But I guess in the peanut butter, the jiva souls have already left the body. So consider it. There are hundreds of millions. The dominating demigods who are empowered to control administration of the natural phenomena are also classified in marginal potency. Lesser beings also. Yeah, like that. In the spiritual sky, God is situated. Thus, the different energies of the Lord, paragraph 3, are present everywhere. Yeah. Although the Lord and His energies are not different, one should not mistake these energies for the Supreme Truth. Now, Prabhupada's giving negative aspects of how people can misunderstand this. One is that the energies are God. We'll discuss that. And we shouldn't consider that the Lord is distributed everywhere impersonally and He loses His personal existence. This is a common argument that, yes, God is one, but when he distributes some stuff, it's like you take a piece of paper and you tear it into 25 pieces, then the original paper is no longer there. And it's a very common argument. That was Schrodinger's actual argument. Many are accustomed to reach such conclusions. It is for this reason that the Upanishad warns us that no one can approach the Lord by his limited potency. So again, we're back on the same point of epistemology. Again and again, by our limited intelligence, we can't understand these things. You can speculate, he's like this, he's like that, he's like this, he's like that. Forget it. Yeah. In Bhagavad Gita 10.2, the Lord says, not even the great rishis and asuras can approach him, asuras. Why don't we speak of the asuras, for whom there is no question? This fourth mantra of Isha Upanishad clearly suggests the absolute truth is ultimately the absolute person. Otherwise, there would not have been there would have been no need to mention so many details in support of his personal features. It's a very important point. If you use this for arguing people, it's a very important point. Why does it mention all these things? Unless we're trying to understand that he's a person. But he's not a person like us. You know, this Einstein's argument, we say, yes, you're correct. Almost all the religions in the world are presenting a materialistic idea of God. He likes this, that, you know, he hates these people, he likes those people. All of the parts and parcels of the Lord's potency are the symptoms of the Lord himself. They have limited spheres of activities. They are never equal to the whole. Under the influence of material nature, they think about the Lord's position. Okay. Isha Upanishad warns of the futility to try and establish the identity. So again, this verse is beginning to talk about what he's like. But for the most part, Prabhupada is still talking about how we can't know, what he's like. And then paragraph 6, it's pretty important. It says, okay, every part and parcel of the complete whole is endowed with some particular energy to act according to the Lord's will. When the part and parcel living entity forgets his particular activities under the Lord's will, he is considered to be in maya, illusion. Thus, from the very beginning, Sri Upanishad warns us to be very careful to play the part designated for us by the Lord. Yeah? This does not mean that the individual soul has no initiative on his own. This is some ways this is an argument I have with Jayavaita Swami for many years about this. Or active nature with intelligence, understand. Because he is part and parcel of the Lord, he must partake of the initiative of the Lord as well. When a person properly utilizes his initiative or active nature with intelligence, understanding that everything is the Lord's potency, he can revive his original consciousness, which was lost due to his association with Maya, the external energy. So this is probably makes this point someplace else even more clear. Remember, I marked it down in my notes. I'm trying to collect my own Bibliov index, because you quote things and you forget where you said it. So I'm trying to collect my own little. I have an index of verses and statements and stuff like that to substantiate my own logic. Yeah. So one place Prabhupada says this, reading it recently. He says, every living entity is created to render a certain unique service, like that. So in some aspects, you don't have to compete with anybody, because nobody can ever possibly be better than you are at doing what you do. It doesn't matter how much they compete, Prabhu, out of the way, I'm better at book distribution than you are, stand back, whatever. And I was like, okay, but you can't defeat me. Yeah, because we're all unique. And therefore, when we're in Maya, Krishna is not getting our service. Right? Yeah. So Prabhupada says that Krishna wants our service, he wants it, and he demands it. He orders us, you must give me your service. But simultaneously he's asking us, please, play with me, whatever we do. Maybe we're a cow that gives chocolate milk or something, I don't know. It's just like, Krishna, this whole thing works, because Krishna is the most lusty person anywhere. You and I may want this, want that, something, but Krishna is unlimited. He just wants so many things like that. And he's so fine in how he enjoys like that. He's the supreme enjoyer. And because of that, he can simultaneously enjoy everybody. Everybody. And everybody's different. How are you going to get out of Maya? And we can give you some suggestions. You can take advice by looking at other people. But you better do it by yourself. Yeah. Everybody's got to go through his own challenges and his own solutions. And because of that, Krishna's interested in everybody. Right? Because they're going to do it differently than anybody else ever did it before. Now Maya will therefore come up with new ways to keep you in Maya. Right? So Maya will generate new ways to keep you in Maya that she never thought of before. So for her it's also like it's fun trying to figure out ways to keep us in Maya like that. Oh, that's interesting though. I never saw anybody escape like that before, you know. Trying to disguise himself like this. But simultaneously Radharani's trying to help us. So, you know, right now Maya's here taking notes. So they know this, they know that. But then Radharani is distracting her and stealing her notes. So fortunately, in the conclusion, Radharani is more powerful than Durga. That's the whole conclusion. But if you don't want to help Radharani, it's going to take a long time. But in the end, she's more powerful than Durga. And so in the end, everybody gets out of the material world. But if you don't take advantage of the Sankirtan movement, it could be hundreds and thousands of lifetimes of Brahma before you get out. So chant your rounds. Yeah. Another point here. There's a big controversy over the origin of the jiva. Right? This one. Yeah. You know, some people say that we came from the Tathasta region like this in the material world, and we never had full developed character because if we could, we could never have left Krishna. And the simultaneously corollary argument is that once we go back to Krishna with our fully manifested personality, we can never fall down again. So it's probably talked about sometimes, and sometimes he said it's incomprehensible in our present position, so don't spend a lot of time worrying about it. One time he said, maybe when you're liberated, you will become Sayujya Mukti. You'll become one with Krishna. Or you will become maybe before you were Sayujya Mukti, and now you're in the material world, and or you were Sarupya Mukti. He said, but right now you're neither one. So first I'll become liberated. Like that, you know? The reason it's such a big point is because it's a political point. It's connected to a political controversy. And the idea is that Prabhupada didn't give you everything. Therefore you should take shelter of Sridhar Maharaj or Narayana Maharaj, because they'll give you more advanced knowledge. And it's written this way. It's written down that Prabhupada, because you're all Westerners, Prabhupada knew you couldn't understand this stuff, or he didn't tell you that, you know, we all came from this impersonal atmosphere, and actually it's a secret. You know, but now we're going to give you the more advanced knowledge. Originally we were all impersonal. Well, we were all spiritual, yeah, but it was non-manifest. It was like that. It wasn't manifest. So there are many arguments about this. You know. What do you think? Can we fall down to the spiritual world once we go back? Yeah. So there are many arguments like that. But if you look at that, 5.8.21, and once they go to Maya, they never return. Before that, the arguments about how every day of Brahma were destroyed, and were forced to be born again like that. So it's talking about being forced within the material world like that. Yeah. So in my comprehension, going on and on like this, is yeah, we always have free will. And when we realize this, Vita Raga Maya Krodha, we become frightened. Because if we realize that, you know, Krishna's not going to force me to go back to Godhead, and if I don't want to go back, I'm not going to go back. So one time in a very lucid state, I may not even been initiated, I was realizing, I don't want to go back. I want to stay, I want to become famous as a sannyasi, I want to become famous as a scholar, I want all the girls to laugh at my jokes, you know, whatever it is. You know, I have so much attachment. You know. So I became very depressed. You become frightened of your own nature at that point. And I have free will. I can't blame anybody else. You know, the end is just me. You know, is small, but I'm just as powerful as God. And so then I was depressed, and I had ontological depression. That's really sweet. That's the danger of becoming a devotee. You can't remain a fool. You know, the fools just are happy with something superficial, but devotees are in big problems. You know? And so, but then I read in the Krishna book, in Prayers for Personified Vedas, where it says that Krishna's foremost quality is his mercy on reclaiming the conditioned souls. So ultimately, even if we don't want to, Sridhar Maharaj, the way he says it, is that Krishna is famous as Hari, a thief. And even though you put so many barriers on things, a thief will still find some way to get through and take you, you know, steal your heart like that. So, sorry, my comprehension, this is something reading here, is that this point is that yes, we always have free will. We're not forced, but if we want to, why do you want to? Question has no meaning. Right? Because we have free will. We just chose to do it. Why? No, chose to do it. But there's so much pleasure you couldn't possibly leave. That's the drug addict argument. The drug addict is taking heroin, he can't possibly, you know, give up because he's experienced too much pleasure. There's still no free will. It's, oh, you're a slave to pleasure. I want to leave you, Krishna. I want to experience the material world, but I can't go because I'm just experiencing so much pleasure. So either way, you know, you're a slave. So they hear, what does it say? I don't care. I basically want to know what Prabhupada says. Because he is part and parcel of what I am. When he properly utilizes his initiative or active nature, so we have it always, with intelligence, understanding that everything is in the Lord's potency, he can revive his original consciousness. This is sudden shit. Well, there was sudden shit, there was no ananda. Okay. So the arguments go on. And you know, and these things. There's apparently one statement by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that the jiva comes from right on the edge of the the material world, the kind of material world. But I'd like to see that. No one's been able to show it to me. Because it's not the contrary to our idea. Our idea isn't that you fall directly from Goloka to Calcutta. You become a little bit, what's the word, self-preoccupied. So one moment you're in Goloka, and next moment you're in Ayodhya. Right? Yeah. There's a little difference in the amount of surrender and stuff like that. Okay. And you're a little more preoccupied, and now you're in Vaikuntha. A little more preoccupied, and now you're with Mahavishnu. He's great, but Shantaras. And then there is the material world. One purport, Prabhupada says, we all enter the material world as Brahma. It's one purport, which is true. It means everybody here has been Lord Brahma at some point. No. So at that, right at that point, too, you can also say, hey, I want back out. Brahma was enough. Or anyway, Ayodhya was enough. Well, I want to go back to it. Yeah. So also there's a possibility that we come and we enter the material world, we enter it from. Krishna's not cruel. It's, send them to hell. No, it's more like he gives you opportunity every step of the way to make your own choice. But here is just like this one little statement like that. We had consciousness like that. So, yeah.
What's the use of all this argument? I mean, if you fall down to the world before that, it's not how you fell down.
That's Prabhupada's point. He said, right now you are either Sayujya Mukti or Sarupya Mukti. So the most important thing is Buddha makes the same point. It was different sermons. He says, if somebody shoots you with a poison arrow, like that, you don't think, well, what's his identification number? Who's his father? Does he have blue eyes or green eyes? Where's he? He says, you take the arrow out, then you try and figure out why the guy shot you. Like that, So it's the same point. He said, it's not, some people say there's a soul, some people say there's a not soul, some people say there's a God. He said, this is all speculation. Now, the first thing right now is to become liberated. And Buddha said, maybe we're impersonal, maybe we're not. Famous argument, they came to Buddha and they said, hey Buddha, now some people say there's a God and some people say there isn't. What do you say, Buddha? And Buddha says, you should find out. So Buddha never said, but Buddha has stressed the importance of your point, is that in Shankaracharya, Shankaracharya also chastises his followers for the same point.
Thank you.
Mahamudgara Stotra. He's talking to his followers. He says, Bhajagovinda, 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 Mudha Mate, Samprapte Sanihita Kale, Nahi Dukvin Karate Vakshane Karane. This worship Govinda, this worship Govinda, all you fools, like there's this kind of fools and rascals. All of your grammatical jugglery and suffixes and prefixes will not save you at the time of death. You can also talk to modern Indians and say all your infinite do loops and conditional if statements will not save you at the time of death. Because yeah. That was the idea, right? Artificial intelligence is going to produce life. That was the whole thing. The 2001 Space Odyssey, the computer HAL, is talking to the guy. But still there's some fragrance of that running around, but artificial intelligence has come down the way a lot. You know, before that was the idea that is the next step, still step, the next step in evolution is computers. And the computer will take over, and the human beings will become the previous step in evolution. Now machines will become, and we'll transfer our intelligence to a computer, and that will be super intelligent. It's still there. People still talk like this. But that's what Shankaracharya says, all these, you know, conditional if statements and all these things in computer language. Computer language is the same thing. It's grammar. It won't save you the time of death. So you present this to a mind body guy, and they'll say, well, actually, you better break it into, you know, does it go? Is it, Bhajago? They start breaking it down into different weird grammatical things. Actually, it's not Bhajago, but it's Bhajago, then da, and then Jago means. Wake up. Yeah. It's pretty good. Another one is that Shankaracharya had a disciple named Govinda, or something, yes. So they say you should all worship Govinda. You should all worship by, you know, my disciple, like that. Worship Govinda, you know. But anyway, maybe he was telling them to worship Govinda. It's not very long. It's Maha, the great hammer for smashing illusion.
Sikh religion.
Yeah.
They have been there, Guru Granth Sahib, so much Rama and Govinda. And they say that these Govinda is the 10th Guru Govinda.
He's coming in the future like that. Yeah. And in the end, this is the point. You cannot establish the absolute truth by reason and argument, unless you're God, I guess. Because the Sarva Bhattacharya, in the end, only God was able to defeat him, with logic and argument. He said, explain the Amarama verse. He gave unlimited arguments. First time he was so polite, listening, yes sir. Do you understand everything? I can understand the words you're saying. Well, why are you listening? Because I'm being polite, you're an older person. So then they argued. And then, when he agreed to argue, then he argued. Probably makes his point. When the person agreed to argue, then Chaitanya made no deviation. He was polite, but he made no deviation then. Okay, now we can argue about these things. But before, he was polite. And he defeated his arguments. Sarvabhauma started to wonder what's going on here. So, okay, explain the Atmarama verse. Very important verse. So he gave, I think it was 35 explanations to Sarvabhauma. And Lord Chaitanya was prepared to give, I think, is this permutation, how many?
64.
Yeah, but he stopped. At that point, if you go through it, there's like 5 explanations for the first word, 3 explanations for the third word, 4 explanations for the fifth word, 8 explanations. So if you do the permutations, it comes, I can't remember, it was 3,542 possible explanations like that. So that was when Sarvabhauma began to realize this person is like, I give 35 explanations, he's ready to give 3,500. You know. So he began to suspect. And then he had an out-of-body experience, and he surrendered. So by logic and argument, all you can do is somebody who's inclined, and Isaac Newton said the same thing, you can bring them to the point of trying it out. And that's all logic and argument will do. They'll bring you to the point of trying out bhakti. Like that. So it's useful in that way. Yeah.
There was a question by His Holiness Jayadvaita Swami Maharaj. I didn't get it, so maybe you can please help me out. He said that why is the jiva the marginal potency? Why did Krishna put us in the marginal potency and not in the internal potency? Yeah. Why is he leaving us the option that we may misuse our independence and then fall and suffer?
Yeah. I don't know. Because somebody's Prabhupada's argument is that without being jiva, Krishna's not complete. And it's one of the, just because he has to be everything, so he also has to be like this, you know, this jiva soul, like that. You know? Somebody's took another point of view is that Krishna enjoys the external pastimes. You know, he wants to fight and do these things, and he can't do them in Vaikuntha, so he comes to the material world, it's like that. You know? But other than that, I don't exact myself, I haven't really logically worked out. So this is Madhyama Adhikari. Madhyama Adhikari is convinced that the process is correct, and eventually all my doubts will be answered. Somebody may say, okay, you say you don't kill animals, but you're killing plants. Plants also have life. It's a good argument. You know? So finally I heard Prabhupada addressing it. He said, yes, it's a fact. You know? He said, but even you don't eat your children. You know? Because you can distinguish that a human being is different than an animal. So same way, you can distinguish that killing a plant is different than killing a human being. But it's a fact.
So a similar kind of answer Hari Sarabhu gave.
Yeah.
That the Lord is unlimited potencies, and the jiva is one of the potencies of the Lord.
Yeah.
If it is not there, then the Lord is not complete, because then he's limited of not having a marginal potency. That's what we concluded from that talk.
Yeah. I'm just saying it's because he has to be everything.
But it was just, trying to blame Krishna for we being here, that he could have done that in some other way, so that he had some marginal potency as well, and we didn't have to come here either.
Yeah, but then there's no free will, exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Antaranga Shakti cannot experience Maya.
And that's what the argument was anyway by Maharaj, that if we were in the eternal potency, then we'll never fall, and we eternally serve Him with love for His pleasure, and He'll drive pleasure from us. So why did he not consider
Bertrand Russell, Nobel laureate, he has this story. He said God was in heaven with the angels, and they were singing how great he was. And he said, well, why not? Because he gave them eternal bliss. So obviously, they're just singing, So then out of the void and darkness came this planet, Earth. And then life was created on the planet. It was suffering, being chased by dinosaurs and all these things, But still they made altars and worshipped God. And it became more developed, and they did different things, and finally they made weapons, and they were killing each other by ghastly means, and still they bowed down and worshipped God. And it goes on like this, and then finally, humanity is, weapons, everything else, are all just unbelievably suffering, but they're still worshipping God. So now out of the void, a second planet comes, and hits the first one and destroys it. And then God turns to the angels and says, that was fun. Let's do it again. So he was an atheist. But on the other hand, but Jesus says, okay, if God had a good time torturing me, I am not the time to just I actually have a power to pronounce to mom. Yeah, the Jiva joyous being. God's a sadistic person, okay. It makes him happy. Because we're part and parcel of Krishna. So when we're in Maya, Krishna's in Maya. Through his energy. Right? He doesn't experience it directly. He's not controlled by it. But he's also, in a certain way, as the point he's making here, sympathetically involved with this. And Lord Chaitanya is suffering. He's asked Haridas Thakur.
Here when it says, the jiva, he must partake in the initiative of the Lord as well. Mm-hmm. So could this mean that the jiva was aware of coming to the material world when the Lord, in this argument, thought of doing so?
The Lord thought of doing so.
As in,
I don't know. Yeah. This is why it says, the great demigods can't figure out what's going on. Like that. Okay, 1-5. Finish us.
Okay.
Yes, sir. 1-2. Yeah.
You mentioned that
3.
That everyone of us is unique, and his activities are unique.
Yeah.
They cannot be the same. Yeah. Still, we see in the different yugas the same pastimes or the same activities, like demons have the same idea how to fight with Krishna or something like this. Yeah. So how it is that?
Because they're not exactly the same. Narada Muni saw different places like that. And when he's traveling places, they're created. They're generally the same. There are forests, there are mines, there's this and that. apparently there's one copy of, you know, Krishna's incarnation in the previous yuga available, like that. It's a little different. You know? It's like every time you see Hamlet over and over again, a live stage play of Hamlet, and every time it'll be different. I mean, to be or not to be, that is the question. Okay, you know. And people pay so much money to go, they, how, Sir John Gielgud, Richard Burton, you know, how are they going to say that line? You know, everyone's just waiting to see what is the subtext, what is the thing like that. You know? So it's like that. It's reproduced, but every time it's a little different. Like that.
On this issue of the independence of the jiva,
yeah.
And if I can bring up the topic, because you mentioned before that your experience with Krishna theology, they have this concept of the devil, you know, which doesn't seem to have any reflection in the Vedic Siddhanta anywhere. And it's sort of the idea that the devil is a competitor and he kind of captures souls, you know?
I've heard probably said maybe it's the because even if you look at the history of the devil, he's evolved through different stages like that. Historically, they can identify definitely, you know, when he got a tail. You know. But I've heard Prabhupada said maybe it's Shiva or Kali. Because Kali's a personality. He exists in the higher planets, very irritable person, you know, like that. And when it comes to this time, the thing, he's the guy who's in charge of the place, like that. So he's like, maybe that's Kali. Kali's pretty much like the devil, you know.
The idea in the Christian theology, isn't it, that it's not really the jiva's responsibility, but he's kind of, it's the devil's work, and, you know, you get captured by
there's that. A whole, actually, if you look at it in Britannica, I forgot what it is, it's the Sacra Britannica, says there's something like, you know, 1,297 sects, divisions, so-and-so of Christianity. So there's, you know, there's every single kind of consciousness. Calvin was coming up with this idea of predestined, that everybody's already fixed. Everybody's who's going to go to heaven, who's not going to go to heaven is already fixed. Like that, you know, it's just like, and what's going to happen like that. So the whole point of how much God is here, how He's here, how much free will we have, how much we don't have. You know, so the Mormons say we should pray on your knees as if it all depends upon God. When you stand up, you should act like it all depends on you. So that's one mental attitude towards the situation. But ours is, yeah, Krishna is, he's making certain limits, you know. I mean, probably he's open to experiment. As a father, you have a certain responsibility for your children. But at a certain point, it goes beyond you. And the high answer is let go of Krishna's. But where that point is, I suspect it's actually a dynamic thing. And sometimes Krishna himself is not sure who's responsible for the kid right now. Is it you or me?
Initiative means free will.
Free will? Yeah, the ability to start things. You can initiate things. The jiva can come up with something that Krishna never thought of. You can initiate some kind of, you know, dance movement or something, or initiate a new flavor of, you know, something like that. You can, he has creative potency.
And I just think about the vegetable skilling tweet. I heard someone say one day that. So then the ideal food is grains, fruits, and milk, because you don't need to kill anything.
No, but the grains are alive. Jiva's there.
But the plant you don't need to kill.
Huh?
But the plant, you don't need to
kill. You don't kill the plant, but you kill the jiva and the grain. That's why you only take fallen fruit, like that, things like that. I guess you try to avoid all this stuff, but in the end, how's it go? Ahasvani, sahasvanam,
ahasvanam,
tamahatam, jiva, jivasa, jivanam. That's his way it's made. That's the basis. The almost the ultimate envy, I guess, is to, you know, it's the ultimate envy, I guess, to have sex with somebody and eat them afterwards. So I guess praying mantises have the ultimate enjoyment. You can have sex with somebody and afterwards you can eat them. So that's the whole thing, is this. If there's no envy, the world doesn't exist. Okay, we're going to go on here. One more text.
Okay.
Number five.
Is the Dalai Lama having any specific succession?
Huh?
Is he in the type of succession of Sri Dalai
Lama? No, Sri Dalai Lama, I mean, I'm talking about Prabhupada's godbrother. He was across the ocean there, across the Ganga. And his appointed successor is Govinda Maharaj. Like that. But it's Prabhupada's godbrother. Okay. Okay, text number five. What can we say here? Number five. We say 10 paragraphs. We continue with the same theme as in text 4. Text 4 tells us who the Lord is, and text 5 tells us what he does. I don't agree with that. I read it again. I don't agree with that. Okay. Does top mean that or he? Because that would be impersonal. And in the Sanskrit it says top or tad. So here Prabhupada is translating as he, right? But in Sanskrit, I mean, more means like that Ishvara, that controlling principle. This Upanishad starts with Isha. The controller must be a person. The same theme is there in the start of Srimad Bhagavatam also. It's also discussing the same point. Number one, contradictions are given to prove the Lord's potencies are inconceivable. Purport again talks about our very first theme of epistemology. How can we know? Or what are the limits of knowledge? Here's more talking about the limits of knowledge. That we cannot know. Prabhupada emphasizes this point again and again. Because we're dealing with mental speculators here. Right? This is especially written for people who are very great mental speculators. And Prabhupada's beating on this point again and again. It doesn't matter how great your speculation is, you can't understand this. There's one philosopher from from Argentina, Carlos Borges. He's really incredible short story about this. This is really, many of the boys have read it, they've bought photocopies. He really points out how ridiculous it is trying to understand things by speculation. Number two, paragraph two, refute this argument. Number 3-6. In our present state, limited senses, we cannot see the Lord, but he comes before us swiftly in a form we can perceive if we are surrendered. So that seems to be the essence of most of this point here. Krishna can move, he can go everywhere. We can't understand, he's so far away, but he can move and we can know him. So that's not in the text. That I think Prabhupada is saying it's implied in the text. It's implied in the text. The actual text I don't think says that. And then text number 7 probably talks about sadguna and nirguna. Again, these are big, vague terms. And we were talking with we've had a big program recently with one group called Nirakari Brahman. Nirakari Brahman. They have a big movie they show you. The movie shows all the sun and the clouds and the rivers and Nirakari, all this music like that. Oh, God is without form, without things. Then we can be all one if we accept God has no form. So it says, God is Nirguna Brahman and Saguna Brahman. It probably goes in details. Number 8-10 deals with Antar Bahyata in the purport. And 10 summarizes exquisitely the last sentence of the Super Humdinger, English word there. He should enjoy us all that we try to enjoy. We're mentioning that. You mean that wine, women, and the song that I am trying to enjoy are actually really enjoyable? Krishna can actually enjoy these things, but in their finest form. Yeah. So we read that, it was really strong. So look at the actual Sanskrit here. Yeah. It says, here is a description of some of the Supreme Lord's transcendental activities executed by his inconceivable potencies. The contradictions here prove the inconceivable potency of the Lord. He walks, but he doesn't walk ordinarily. If someone walks, it is illogical to say he doesn't walk. In my note, this is a real common argument by idiots. They say, can God create a rock that is so heavy he can't lift it? You heard this before? Yeah, they did. Yeah?
The answer is the rock is stuck in
it. Yeah?
The rock with the free will.
Oh, okay.
Can create us.
Yeah. So Prabhupada says, he asked Prabhupada that, can God create a rock he can't lift? If God is all powerful, can he create something he can't lift?
Yes.
And then Prabhupada said yes, and then he would lift it. So in our calculus one class in the university, the professor went through that. It's a logical fallacy. This has to be God. You can use the same thing for many other things too, like that. And the basic things you say, the first thing you say, God is all powerful. The second one you say, can he create a rock that he can't lift? That's denying the first term like that. And so actually the thing would say, yes, he's all powerful, he can create a lot of rock, but he can't lift. But there's no duality involved. Anyway, this is the point. It seems illogical. But this just goes to show the point that God's potencies are inconceivable. Like that.
Somebody told that.
Let's go on now. Because yeah, otherwise, we're not going to finish everything on time.
This related to this point. God,
we'll come back to it afterwards. Because Prabhupada's discussing the same points again and again and again. You're like that. Yeah. Okay. The person is trying to understand these things. But, this is the point again, is that God's potencies are inconceivable. Right? And you cannot possibly know them by mental speculation. Paragraph 2. We should not take it for granted that because we cannot see God with our eyes, the Lord has no personal existence. Yeah. He's very, very far away. And Prabhupada gives the example of, he can come to us in 1 second like that. He can manifest himself. Someplace else that he gives the example of that, even though it's a cloudy day, the sun still exists. Right? Even though we can't see it. But we can see it through his energies. Paragraph 3. Yet when the personality of God comes before us, we neglect him. So here's the problem. You know, we don't want to see him. So many scholars who contend the Lord descends in the body made of matter. So most of these points, we know these points. The Prabhupada is emphasizing this for a certain kind of people. And now the Prabhupada is especially talking in paragraph 4 about the Arch of Vigraha, the incarnation there. And this is not a material form. It's actually Krishna can incarnate in this form like that. He has so much potency and everything else. He can be manifest in a way that we can appreciate it. That. And the most important point here is, though, that he only does it in terms of our surrender. Right? This verse says he's far away, but he can be very near as well. So he's very far away, but he can be in the deity like that. If we accept this text, then we accept that Krishna has these inconceivable potencies. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense. Why do you talk about this? It talks about this because it's a fact. He's a person. He can manifest up. He has an abode. He has hands. He has legs. But not like ours. And so, therefore, he can be present in the deity like that. Earth. Okay, so basically, this is the point that it's a matter of text of paragraph number 6. Prabhupada says, in Bhagavad Gita 4.11, the Lord says, paragraph 6, in Bhagavad Gita 4.11, the Lord says that how he treats his devotee depends on the devotee's degree of surrender. The Lord reserves the right not to reveal himself to anyone and everyone, but to show himself only to those surrendered souls who surrender unto him. Thus, for the surrendered soul, he is always within reach. Whereas for the unsurrendered soul, he is far, far away. And he cannot be approached. So that's the Bhaktivedanta explanation of this verse. And it's not there in the text. But if you look at it logically, it has to be there. Otherwise, how can you say that simultaneously he's everywhere, he's in his abode, like that? Then in text number 7, Prabhupada goes from this point of saguna and nirguna, and in paragraph number 7, paragraph 80 comes back to the point about how Krishna can be present to his purposes if he wishes to. The two words in the revealed scriptures often apply to the Lord, saguna with qualities and nirguna without qualities, are very important. The word saguna does not imply that when the Lord appears with perceivable qualities, he must take on a material form and be subject to the laws of nature. Because that's what they believe, that Brahman, when it becomes Saguna Brahman, it becomes material. Like that. For him, there is no difference between material and spiritual energies. He is a source of all energies. As a controller of all energies, he can at any time be under the influence. He cannot at any time be under the influences that we are. The material energy works according to his direction. Therefore, he can use that energy for his purposes without ever being influenced by the qualities of the material world. In this sense, he is nirguna, without material qualities. So when Krishna incarnates and he's saguna, right? We worship in the form, the deity has a certain size, the deity has made of a certain element, deity is a certain color, it has guna, it has qualities. But he's simultaneously nirguna, right? Because those qualities are not under the control of material nature. I was wondering how this worked before I ever moved to the temple or anything. And one time I saw Prabhupada in a lecture in Los Angeles, and he was lecturing, and I could see how the modes of nature were coming to him and going around him. It was a super soul can make it possible. It was like you have a diamond, very rough cut diamond. I'm rich, and I fight it in the forest. I'm going to go home and become a poor man, become very rich. And I drop it into a fast moving stream of water with rocks and stuff, and I can't see it because it looks the same as the water. So how do I find my diamond? I can't see it. It's right there in front of me. How do I find it in the water? Yeah, you feel for it. You use a different sense. So with bhakti, you can experience these things. If you want to serve these things, then you can experience them. If you don't want to serve them, then Krishna doesn't manifest it. So when I scratch my nose, it means it itches. You know, I'm being pushed. But Prabhupada is like, you know, I've heard that if you look at videos of Prabhupada, you'll see many times when he discusses the material scientists, he goes like this. Material scientists, like, it's a bad smell. So Prabhupada, all of his activities are under the influence of the internal potency like that. You know? So he has materially perceivable qualities, but they're not material like that. And so we can actually see this like that. So I go down here. Yeah.
So point.
Yeah. Yeah. He is so. Nor does the Lord become formless entity at any time, for ultimately he has eternal form. But my people, Lord, his impersonal aspect of Brahman effulgence is but the glow of his personal rays, as the sun rays are the glow of the sun god. It's very difficult for devotees to understand Brahman realization, because whenever we see anything, we see Krishna. Premanjana charita bhakti vilochanena santasa daiva vidyeshi palokyanti yam shama sundaram chinta guna svarupa. When a devotee sees the Paramatma, he doesn't see Paramatma. Paramatma means sat and chit. There's no ananda, there's no relationship if you actually realize Paramatma. But a devotee, he sees the Paramatma, he sees, oh, Krishna's telling me to do that. Oh, Krishna's angry with me. Right? Oh, Krishna's pleased with me. And he sees these things happening because Krishna's controlling it. Somebody else sees, oh, the Ishwara, the all-pervading, transcendent, uncontrollable, supreme power, you know, that it controls Dharma, has done this. And Dhritarashtra's position, Akura was saying, you have to be fair with the sons of Pandava and your own sons like that. So many arguments. And he said, look, you know, I know there is Dharma, I know there's laws, I know there's control, and I know when people start acting improperly, that Dharma takes a human form and walks the earth like that. And I know the son of Devaki is not an ordinary human being. I know the son of Devaki is that Dharma taking a human form. And I know he will destroy my sons, but I can't give up my attachment. So he saw Krishna as the Ishwara, but he couldn't see him as a person. It's very impressive, you know, the Dharma in a human form. You look at somebody and realize, this guy is Dharma in a human form. There's no, you're respectful, you're afraid. Maybe there's Shantaras like that, you know, but you aren't sure, like how much, Draupadi, very famous painting of Draupadi. It won first prize in an ISKCON art competition, sponsored by one bank, Bhaktisiddhanta. And she's sitting there like someone's knocking her door at night. Somebody she knows, and she's in her nightdress, right, like a young girl, like 16 years old or 15 years old. She has a candle in front of her, with her hand in front of the candle. And she's looking like, well, who's here? What do you want? And you think, oh yeah, Draupadi was a covered flame. Well, I understand the symbolism, you know. But why did they win first prize? You know? You look, wow. You know? Because her shadow is death, like that. And at first you don't see it, you know. That's why you realize that, you know, her shadow, the candle, is the face of death. It's really a spooky face like that. So Draupadi didn't realize what she was going to cause. And because she had lived, and she knew what she was going to have caused to happen, so much suffering like that. So if she's coming like that,
you know. But somebody looks at her and he sees, ooh. Yeah. So that's the personal realization. Ishwara. Okay. Go ahead. Number 8. That goes back to how.
We understand that what did you know about Prabhupada? That Prabhupada, like we were discussing with scientists, was saying that.
Yeah.
So, what was the point
that when I scratch my nose is because I am being forced to do it. When Prabhupada does it, it's all part of like emphasizing the lecture. What he's doing, he's using it to all for Krishna. Prabhupada, when you touch a doorknob, does it become spiritual? As long as I'm touching it. Certain things Krishna maintains spiritual. The spiritual master's shoes, his sitting place, and his bed are always spiritual. Nobody should use them. But other things, it's like when they're under his control, they become spiritual. I mean, let's go, then Maya takes charge again. So how much Prabhupada's body and everything else are being, consciously controlled by him, or being controlled by Radharani, I think I can go back. Okay, text number 8, paragraph number 8, probably gives the same example. That Krishna can incarnate because of our desire, like the Shringadeva and Prahlad. Paragraph number 9, 535, to say, Govinda enters everything. Okay, now we go into this section that Prabhupada is talking about Bahya, Anta Bahya. He's without and within. Yeah. And Prabhupada talks a little bit about it. He also talks about Antaryami. He's inside everything as the Paramatma. Okay. So did everybody understand this point? Bahir nissing ho ridai nissing ho. Yato, 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 yato. Okay, what does ito nissing ho mean? Ito. Okay, because if you Western guys don't know this. Ito, yato.
Here, there, everywhere.
It's nice to memorize these things. If you know these, you go from the West, you have to learn the language. So it's a nice meditation. I see Nishimadeva everywhere, like that. Very, very nice verse. Kapila Dev, he tells his mother that internally I keep myself as the Paramatma. Externally I keep myself as? Time. Yeah, so the materialist especially, he sees time acting this way and that way. So, therefore, our perception of time is our perception of the Paramatma. I was on a BART, Bay Area Rapid Transit, the train goes all over the Bay Area in San Francisco, and I met a devotee for maybe like 6 years, and two girls were sitting behind me talking. One of them said, "How do you kill time?" Now it's a common phrase, right, amongst people. When I heard that, I was like shock. It was like two witches behind me or something. I was thinking, well, why did I react like that? It's a common phrase. Then I was realizing actually that being a devotee for 6 years, I never heard a devotee say that one time. Devotees don't have time to kill. Right? For them, time is so precious. They use every moment. They're dividing it up. They have different systems. So finally, sannyasi is supposed to be paramatma realized. So he should have a very good sense of timing. When it's time to break the rules and do something longer. When it's like that. So our sense of time is our sense of the paramatma. He's manifest everywhere like that. So he's outside as time, as a Bharat Rup, Prabhupada says. Everything's Krishna. Everything's Krishna. But it's different. Is the Bharat Rup real or not?
It's temporary. It's real but temporary.
Prabhupada says it's more or less an imagination. Like that. Yeah. It's the objective material body of Krishna, he says. It's the objective material body of Krishna. But then he says, of course, Krishna never, objective material form of Krishna. But he says, of course, Krishna never becomes a material object. Krishna never becomes a material object. So it's a real boundary thing like that. He says it's an imagination to encourage the the atheists. So it's this very, it's the first step. The first step in God-realization is the Bharat Rup, like that. Plus, he's external as a Bharat Rup, that. And then internally as Antaryami, as a Paramatma. And finally, the fact is that there is nothing but God within and without. Everything is a manifestation of his different energies, like heat and light emanating from a fire. And in this way, there is a oneness amongst his diverse energies. Although there is oneness, however, the Lord in his personal form still enjoys unlimitedly all the personal pleasures enjoyed minutely by the tiny parts and parcel living entities. Now we can say, therefore, that we are minutely enjoying good food. We are minutely enjoying the weather. So this would kind of say that Krishna, through us, is also minutely enjoying all these things in the material world. Kubja? Is she, what Shakti is she? Is she Atmanga Shakti? She's a Prabhupada gives the Krishna book a name. She's like a person who promises to never eat anything but prasadam, but wants to have nice prasad. So she, one Garga Samhita says she was Supranaka, in a previous life, she wanted to enjoy the Ram. She finally decided there's nobody like Ram. I only want to have sense gratification with Ram. Yeah? So it's a certain kind of vrata, a certain kind of surrender to Krishna that I won't eat anything but prasadam, but I want to enjoy sense gratification with prasadam. How many people here in that consciousness? So Prabhupada says it's dangerous because, and Kubja, of course, is the example of the conjugal ras, which you can also have in other kinds of relationships, like prasadam. He says it's dangerous because Krishna associates with this Shakti sometimes, but not always, like the Antaranga Shakti, like Radharani. Radharani doesn't want to enjoy Krishna. She wants to please Krishna, like that, you know. And so the Krishna, in this sense, he does enjoy us having a nice day. As enjoying some pleasure, Krishna does associate with that sometimes, in some ways. A lot to learn. The thing is, you go on reading more and more, your logic develops more and more. You got all these questions, finally are answered. Then finally you become like Prabhupada, where you have unlimited intelligence. The more I go through this, the more I realize it's like, you know, Prabhupada's intelligence is unbelievable, how it's logically arranged like this. Okay, so now we have a word from our, where is it here? Yeah, our sponsor. Then we can take a little break. We'll go to the playground for 15 minutes. We'll come back. Maybe 12:15. Start again. Okay.
Thank you, Maharaj. Just a few announcements. First is regarding this Vaishnav Sadachar course. There's a bill at the entrance to this room, and there's one will be posted here. One I will move up to replace it. And the course is going to be conducted by His Holiness Bhakti Priyat Bhagavat Swami Maharaj. His name was Priyat Dangar Prabhu, you know, last year. And he taught this course last year. You attended the course?
I was there.
And I attended the course last year. It's very inspirational and really an eye-opener in terms of what can be achieved if we clearly apply ourselves to the process of Krishna consciousness. So the venue will be Classroom 1, where the Bhakti Vaibhav classroom is classes are being held right now. And you'll be getting some certification in the form of a Bhakti Chalitra certificate at the end of the course. The dates are this coming Saturday, so the 2nd of February, Tuesday, over 4 days, and be two sessions, one from 10 to 1 p.m., and the second session from 3 to 6 p.m. And lunch prasadam will be served daily at 1:30 p.m. over these 4 days. So just a little bit about this course. It deals with self-revealing and self-healing, which means identifying some problems in life and then working through them. and there's a lot of interactive exercises, very pupil-oriented. PowerPoint presentations, group work, and dramas. So some of the topics which will be covered by Maharaj are how to follow and not to follow rules, devotional qualities, offenses and forgiveness, behaving in public, correcting others, association with non-devotees, guests, relatives and friends, association with different levels of devotees. You may notice that most of these things we're looking at in terms of principles and details from negative devotion. You'll pick them up. The charge for the course is 1,500 rupees, but for those who are studying here at the MI, it's a 50% reduction. You pay just 750 rupees. So if you want to register for this course, I advise you to do so as soon as possible, because outside is already registering for this course. Please contact Ravi at the Mayapur Institute office down the hall.
Is he back?
He's back. If not, then you can see Deepanjan or myself. So that is the first announcement. Second announcement regards the open book assessment in the 6. The question is on the chart here. Those devotees who arrived from Kolkata this morning, welcome firstly. And also please make a note of this. You must write this topic down. It's not in your student handbook. Maharaj is formulating this question himself, which I think is very good, because it gives you it will really test your knowledge and your understanding of the text, which is what the whole Bhakti Shastri is about, and how you can apply it in your life. Now, there's some confusion yesterday from the students, because they were wondering whether it meant three or more each for these three subsections, or one each, whatever. Well, you can do one each, that's suggested, so you cover more areas. And if you're going to do more than one, you're welcome, but the minimum is three. Of ways in which Sri Vishwamanishad can be applied and used for these. Please use specific references from the text. Somebody has written purport and misspelled it. It's true also, you can use words and information from the purport. In terms of due dates.
You can also do all three on the first one.
Maharaj says you can do all three on one.
Yeah.
It's accepted.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
in one.
We have two. Do I take questions? Two more points.
Any combination.
This,
yeah.
Any combination, whatever.
At least
three is the minimum. So 500 to 650 words will allow 700, okay? But what you need to do, very important for this assignment, we're going to stipulate this, is make a note of how many words you are using. A word count of your own. Some of you have computers which have this facility, like Rupa Vilas Prabhu. And on that, Radha Vala Prabhu always writes down the word count of these assignments. We've been so since I requested that. But all of you, please take the time to count the number of words to facilitate the marking process. Due date. This assignment is due on the 1st of February, Monday. Any questions on open book assessment before we move on to two more slides?
Do you
think
Mantradari Purport, I couldn't hear you.
Pardon?
You are saying about Mantradari Purport.
Yeah, you have a difference from the Sri Upanishad.
Purports.
Both of them.
Both.
The whole book.
The whole book, cover to cover.
So this is only, this is like one assignment?
Yes.
So, and then you identify three or more, either A, B, or C.
Yeah.
But three ways.
No.
You write one each, or three for one, whatever, two for one or one for that, as long as it's three as a minimum, you may write more if you like.
Either one for each, or three for one, or whatever.
Three is a minimum, these are
some
minimum,
and two for me.
Some total
one
for
three. Two for me,
yes,
one for
three.
Three for one.
So, invocation and introduction.
It says text, mantras. Marsh, the question is
invocation and introduction.
Students know you can include invocation.
Yes, and the introduction. But
you can't use this?
No,
it's
not.
The bag?
It's a bag
from the book.
Forget it.
Now, in terms of the slokas, Govinda Prema says that the last day for shlokas is the third. There is no tien. So please get yourself tested on or before third.
What are the shlokas?
Very good question. He wants to know what are the shlokas. If you turn to the beginning of your manual, you see there's 45 references for shlokas. You have to know all. But you will not be tested on every single one that they're sitting. You'll be tested on a portion of it.
How many?
Five. But if you say, let me learn this, and this, then you'll probably fail this. So, there's not only the most popular ones.
Maybe it's like a revision as well as the last.
That's it. Good point. So in terms of sadhana sheet, these must be handed in to Goswami Prabhu on Friday after your closed book test, which will also be on Friday the 29th of January.
Friday
the 29th of January. 28th is Lord Nityananda's appearance day. No class. So besides attending the festival and Abhishek and all of that, you can start your test. Yes, I see a hand.
What year did you have your book exam on?
5 and 6. Yes, sir. Take the break to think about it, you can ask me after break. Any other questions? So you have 11 minutes left for your break.
Yeah.
showing, yeah, there's a good variety, but
you know, there are a certain number of limited meanings you can get out there. Same thing goes to this, we accept all of
them. At this explanation, there can be, there can be explanation of, like, unless and until one accepts authority, then we will have a lot of that.
By mental speculation, I can imagine, but if you want to follow the authority of the Amara Kosha or the Nirupti, no, you're limited.
But limited? Suppose there are one meaning is that you can enjoy.
So I said this. That's what I said. This is Lord Chaitanya showed there's 3,500 meanings to the verse. They said, okay, we accept 3,500. There's not 4,000. And none of the ones you're giving are accepted. That's our goal. Because this verse is not based upon the speculation. So then you reject all the Sarvoma's explanations. Sarvoma accepted. So yeah, really to be following this, I have to be taking my definitions from the Vedic standard. One is mental speculation, one is just the problem is that we're not this endeavor in his mind and senses. You know, the second part of the verse of God being the all feeling. So then, okay, as the person you accept it. But you can't make a problem, but it's going to be something else. You can't speculate that it's going to be yes, I mean, it's just going to be a simple perspective, like anything. You've got all these condoms between the five senses. Okay, it's rejected. The next one, then, okay, the variety of meaning according to the actual meaning. Now that, So, we were talking about the Paramatma, the Ishvara. He has hands, he has legs, but he doesn't, you know, he can reach everywhere. He has a bow, but he's everywhere. Okay. And now it's talking about the jivas, the individual jivas, next two verses like that. And the first line, so both are the same pretty much. He who sees everything in relation to the Supreme Lord who sees all living entities as his parts and parcels, and who sees the Supreme Lord within everything, never hates or any being. And because number seven is the same thing. Yas tu sarvani bhutani apani avabhu vijataha. He who always sees all living entities as spiritual sparks and sparks, parks, in quality one with the Lord becomes a true knower of things. What thing can be illusion or anxiety from him? So he becomes free from hate, free from anxiety. Our particular thoughts in the matter. What do you have here? Yeah, okay. Okay, this is the end of part one, text number 1-6. That doesn't belong here. That's from our previous study guide, the first sentence. You can eliminate. Yeah, text number 6. Here we are continuing with the same idea as in text 5. Actually, the very end of the purport, Prabhupada's saying this. You know, text 5, Isha is within everything and without anupashati. I'm sorry. That idea. The Isha is within and without everything, anupashati. We see these things. In the first paragraph, this is a description of the Mahabhagavata. Then in paragraphs 2-3, Srila Prabhupada describes the different levels of spiritual development. What four categories of people does the Mahabhagavata start to see? So you've already learned this, right? You've already discussed this in Nectar of Instruction.
Yeah.
Which text number is in that Nectar of Instruction discussion?
Five.
Five. Yeah. Yeah. Because it talks about different levels of people of association like that. Let's see somewhere. Because it's interesting, because in text number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, in Upadeshamrita it says, Krishneti Yasya Giritam Manasadriya Dikshasti Chaipanatavi Tabajitam Isha. Yeah. And how does Prabhupada translate Isha in the text? The text. The deity. The deity, he translates there, that the Majjhimadhikari has taken initiation, diksha, from bona fide spiritual master, and he's engaged in worshipping Isha.
The deity.
You know, Prabhupada makes it very practical, very realistic like that. So, many times, Pandigadas or not, actually my real text is Upadeshamrita. I know it inside, outside, everything else. One confusion in that thing is that Prabhupada's talking about initiation, and usually when he's talking about initiation, that purport he's talking about second initiation. And he calls that spiritual initiation. You know? And that means when you're engaged in worshiping the deity, and that's second initiation like that. He talks about first initiation as Harinam initiation. And sometimes, actually he gave Harinam initiation before devotees were following the four principles. In New York, he did that. And other people also do that. Other Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas do that. Now, as far as I can understand, Prabhupada looking at us in the West, he said, okay, these guys are never going to get up to a Brahminical standard, so let's lower the standard for second initiation and raise it for first initiation. Like that. You know? So it's the difference between Prabhupada's humor and giving initiation and other Acharyas in the Gaudiya Math and stuff like that in the West and so on. But same thing, translates Isha. So Upadeshamrita is also talking about the same thing, about Isha, coming through the deity. Okay? Yeah. Okay, number 4 warns us not to imitate or artificially see with this Uttamadhikari vision. So Upadeshamrita, text number 5 talks about the different levels of devotees, 1, 2, 3. And text number 5, right? This Thais who Baba done a chair. It talks just about the Uttamadhikari. About how his body is not a part of the material world. We shouldn't see him as being a certain caste or a certain complexion or a certain mentality. So text number 5 of the Upadeshamrita talks about the Uttamadhikari exclusively like that. And how we shouldn't see people like that, and how we shouldn't imitate this. This is a point that Prabhupada brings up again and again and again. Don't imitate somebody on a higher platform. It's a very critical point.
I would like to add, I would like to expand to that, don't imitate also somebody on the lower platform. Know where you are, actually.
Yeah, the end of the very end of the Nectar of Instruction, text number 4, last paragraph, Prabhupada says, the devotee should be intelligent enough to understand what platform he's on, and intelligent enough to know what platform other people are on, so he can apply these properly. So Madhya Madhukari has to see these platforms like that. Yeah. And yeah, you should act according to your level. You shouldn't give excuses for not following your standard like that. Okay, number 5, paragraph 5 through 6, we say, are a summary of the introduction. Again, epistemology, but each time sweeter, sharper, flavor smaller. Epistemology. Yeah. Okay, there are three. Many philosophers divide philosophy into three areas. Epistemology is the beginning here, Everett. Epistemology, ontology, and praxeology. So epistemology means how you know. Well, my mother told me, or I saw, or I figured it out, or the Vedas say, Shruti, Smriti. Ontology means what is the ultimate nature of things? What is actually real? Like that. And so, of course, we discussed this too. The Bhagavad Gita talks about what is knowable, Kshetra, Kshetra, Gnyar. And actually, what is knowable, if you read that, is the Paramatma. Everything else is just coming and going, it's changing. You can't know it. It doesn't exist. You can't know this table, because in the end it won't be a table. If it wasn't a table, it won't be a table. But behind it is the Paramatma. He's the one who gives the form and everything else. Then praxeology means practice. How do you apply this? So either you get ethics, you know, morality, aesthetics. These are all different branches of philosophy or practical application of your ontology. Episteme means the basis upon which we stand. Like that. Okay, so we went back to discuss these things again. How do we know? In paragraph 7, okay, continues with 4. Yeah, we shouldn't artificially adopt the idea of who's Madhukari and who can have this first class vision to see everything as part and parcel of Krishna. We were interested in looking at Bhagavad Gita 6-9. That Srila Prabhupada cites in paragraph number 7. We found a Gita this morning and read it, 6:8-10. It was like Prabhupada talking directly to us. Don't be a bogus guru. We are Madhyama Adhikaris, myself. We have a long way to go before we are real gurus. Prabhupada talks about that. But this is the kind of guru we are. We can be now. Yeah. We are making progress to the ultimate goal. Right? Progress. So actually I'll mention it right now, because in the next text, Prabhupada says that the Uttamadhikari can see this, everybody's part and parcel of Krishna, everybody's connected. The Uttamadhikari can see this. Yeah? But he says also the Madhyamadhikari can also see this. Right? But he sees it in a different way than the Uttamadhikari. Just going to go through the text now. All your questions will be answered. Don't say, what is this? What is this? This is a description of the Mahabhagavat, text number 6, first paragraph. The great personality who sees everything in relation to the supreme personality of Godhead. Yeah. The Lord's presence is realized in 3 stages, Kanista. And it's nice because Prabhupada gives a different definition each time. Kanista Adhikari is in the lowest stage of realization. He goes to a place of worship, like a temple, church, mosque, according to his religious faith, and worships there according to scriptural injunctions. Devotees in this stage consider the Lord to be present at the place of worship and nowhere else.
Okay.
They cannot ascertain who is in what position in devotional service, nor can they tell who has realized the Supreme Lord. Such devotees follow the routine formulas and sometimes quarrel amongst themselves, considering one type of devotion better than another. Prophet Muhammad can kill Jesus Christ. Not that. Children. No, my daddy can kill your daddy. It's like children, the same thing, you know. So the same thing, you know, they argue about Jesus Christ is the only guru. No, Muhammad is the only guru. No, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami is the only guru. Everybody else is a demon. Yeah. So it's Kanista Adhikari. Kanista Adhikaris are actually materialistic devotees or is simply trying to transcend the materialistic boundary to reach the spiritual plane. Okay? Those who have attained the second stage of realization are called Mahajanamadakaras. These devotees observe the distinctions between four categories of people, which you already know. And then we try to make, you know, have a different relationship with these four categories. Text number, there's more details in the question, read them. Paragraph 3. Madhyamadhikari sees everything in relation to the Supreme Lord. Such a devotee does not discriminate between atheists and theists, but sees everyone as part and parcel. He sees difference between the, he sees essentially there's no difference between the learned Brahmana and the dog in the street, because both of them are part and parcel of Krishna. So he distinguishes their bodily thing, but within that he sees that they're spirit, soul, and he tries to deal with them spiritually. Like that. Yeah. Okay. Then text paragraph number 4. Those who imitate Uttamadhikari by flaunting a sense of oneness and fellowship, but who behave on a bodily platform, are actually false philanthropists. You see many people like this. They artificially try and say, you know, create peace and we're all one and we should love everybody and these kind of things like that. And many times I find people like that. You know, oh, shanti, shanti. These kind of things. Yeah. The concept of universal brotherhood must be learned from an Uttamadhikari and not from a foolish person who does not properly understand an individual soul or the Supreme Lord's super soul expansion who dwells everywhere. Right. So then the sixth paragraph, it is clearly mentioned in mantra 6 that one should observe or systematically see. This means that one follows the previous acharyas, the perfected teachers. Anupashati is the exact Sanskrit word. Anu means following, pashati means to observe. Thus the word anupashati means that one should see things as one, not as one does with a naked eye, but following the previous acharyas. Due to material defects, the naked eye cannot see properly. One cannot see properly unless one has heard from a superior source. So yesterday we showed this example of the bear climbing up the back of a tree. So you didn't see that until you heard properly. You know? So as we're hearing properly, then we see with intelligence, not the eye. The eye is just a mechanical device. It has some intelligence built in. Then after the brain does certain things. But finally the mind, which is subtle, which uses the brain, has to develop its own particular form and structure. Then it sees things in a certain way like that. You know? So Uttamadhikari doesn't see this thing the same way. Prabhupada gives an example that one man is walking down the road. He sees a man way up in a tree cutting on the limb of the tree. He's sawing away like that. You know. And he's collecting some wood for firewood. But the unfortunate thing is the man is sitting on the limb and the tree's over here. Sorry, no, the tree's over there, right? The tree's over there. The guy is sawing like that and the tree's over there, right? So the man on the ground says, well, hey, watch it. You're going to cut the limb and fall down and hurt yourself. The guy in the tree throws a hammer at him and says, well, shut up. I don't need your advice. You know? So the man on the ground says, okay, don't you want it? And he goes away, and the fool keeps sawing like that. And sure enough, the branch breaks, and he falls on the ground and cracks his head. And after 15 minutes, he comes back to consciousness. And he says, wow, that man on the ground was a great mystic. He could tell the future. So the Lord Brahma, he can look at you and he can say, okay, you're going to be married, you're going to have 5 kids, your grandchildren are going to be named this and that, this and that, this and that. Wow. You know? Because he has such vast intelligence. Right? Because of the intelligence, we see things differently. We don't see them the same. Somebody's, you know, you see the symptoms. You know, if there's a bag on the side of the road, they're kind of tied up, and it's moving, what do you think? Bag there on the side of the road, here's this big and it's like this big, right? And it's kind of moving like this and that. What do you think?
Some living entity.
What kind of living entity?
Like a mouse or a cat.
Or a rat.
Or a rat.
Yeah, so you, same way, you look at the body, it's a bag, and then by the symptoms, by the activity, the things like this and that, you know. That's why usually, like a doctor, you come and say, doctor, I'm sick, cure me. So, okay. Wait a second, like, what's the problem? What do you feel? Open your mouth, you know, like that. And give some blood, you take your pulse. So when you're preaching, you see somebody, you ask questions, right? present things, you watch the reaction like that. You have to take the pulse. You have to get inside the person. And once you do that, you can see this person is a Maya body, but he's not attached to it. It's just he hasn't heard anything else. You know, he's a nice guy. So if I start explaining the philosophy properly, he's going to accept it. But this guy, he knows everything. He's a demon. He's, you know, he knows too much. He knows everything. He's opposed to God, so I can't deal with him. So same way, this is anupashati, right? And how do you tell these things? By being a devotee, because everything is meant for Krishna's service. That's the essence of everything. So to see everything is connected to Krishna, you know, we can only see that if we're a pure devotee. You know? Prabhupada says if a lusty person sees a beautiful girl, he thinks, oh, how can I exploit her? She should cook for me. She should sing for me. You know? And if a devotee sees a pretty girl, he thinks, wow, she should become a devotee. She should go meet Krishna, like that. Yeah? So he sees how everything can actually be connected to God like that. So any questions? Pretty concept, pretty easy like that. Text number 6. Yeah. At present there are many, paragraph 6, at present there are many commentaries. Okay. And then Prabhupada's going back again to talking about how Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence of all these things. Yeah. We should try to understand everything through Srimad Bhagavatam. Very mildly, very logically. This is kind of like a sales pitch. Prabhupada's trying to sell Bhagavad Gita's and Srimad Bhagavatam's to these Indian intellectuals. Yeah. Okay. Number 7 goes back to anupashati. According to Bhagavad Gita 18:54, only one who is already liberated, Brahma Bhukta, can become an Uttama Adhikari and see every living being as his own brother. This vision cannot be had by politicians. So he's criticizing people like Gandhi and other people. You should see all the Muslims as your brothers. You should see everybody as your brother. Yeah, yeah. This vision cannot be held by politicians who are always after some material gain. He wants everybody to vote for him. One who imitates the symptoms of Uttamadhikari may serve another's outward body for the purpose of fame or material reward, but he does not serve the spirit soul. Such an imitator can have no information of the spiritual world. The Uttamadhikari sees the spirit soul within the material body and serves him as spirit. Thus the material aspect is automatically served. So we cannot artificially create brotherhood. You know? To some degree, yeah, we're all brothers and we're opposed to the animals. You know, like that. Come on, brother, let's fight the animals for the food. Let's go kill the bears, you know, or whatever, and, you know, kill all the insects because we're brothers, you know, they aren't our brothers. So you can create a certain kind of brotherhood like that. Yeah. But here it's talking about brotherhood amongst all living entities. And you can't do that unless you're actually on the Brahma Buddha platform. Otherwise you'll see that it serves as some material distinction. And the material distinctions will always create conflict and diversity. You're thinking it only in terms of the gross body. Right? Gross body isn't the mode of ignorance. Yeah, so it's designed to promote this selfishness, this egoism. It's designed to stimulate this egoism, this vanity, like that. So you have to go with others. Okay? The text is clear. Yeah.
This last two sentences, if you read, the Uttamadhikari sees the spirit soul within the material body and serves the spirit. Then the material aspect is automatically served. So if suppose he's seen a person who is living entity and he's suffering, but he will serve him only as spirit. I mean, he'll probably try to preach him. So how is the material aspect actually automatically served? Because he might still be suffering materially or on the body platform.
No, it's like somebody, I see this person has to get to the airport in Calcutta. You know. So then I see he has to have a car. You know? And so the car has to run, the car has to have a driver, all these things have to be there. So if I try and serve his purposes, which is to get to the airport in Calcutta, then automatically he's going to have a good car, like that, an appropriate car to accomplish his purpose. So if this person is so advanced he should leave his body and go back to Godhead directly, okay, then I don't take any concern. The person's in a position, he's like very purified, everything else, he's just been hit by an automobile, I look at him and I say, just chant Hare Krishna. He's lying. He says, yeah, yeah. I mean, one devotee, she actually had cancer, brain cancer. It's a very famous story. And went through this whole thing like that. In the end, she was like, you know, finally leaving her body. And her husband was downstairs. He's a president. So the girls were taking care of her. They knew it was, and she actually told him, in a couple more days, I'm going. I've got the information. So the girls ran in and said, she says, Mama, she's going. You know, she ran upstairs and she was like gasping for air. Her body was black, like that. And then she breathing again. Everybody was chanting like madman. And he told her, he said, don't hang on, let go. So she's looking, nodding like that. The next time it came like that, she let go. He's gone like that. You know? So he didn't tell her, hang on, Prabhu. You know, chant your rounds, this and that. Because she was ready, you know, like that, you know. But somebody else, you tell them, hey, hang on, you're not ready. You're going to take this. Don't live, don't die. The story, the sage sees one person, he's a butcher, he says, you know, just live as long as you can. Don't live, don't die, because your life is hellish now. It's hellish afterwards. A king's son, you're enjoying like anything, so live as long as you can, like that, whatever, you know. So then he sees the purpose of the soul, and automatically the body is best served. For self-reliant soul, he doesn't need the body. If somebody else is going to use his body to preach, then yeah, we have to take care of the body properly. If somebody is very attached, then we make some arrangement where he can gratify his senses, where they become peaceful, and he can begin to hear. His senses become dull. We give enough sense of gratification, the tigers will calm down. When you put a flower garland on your body, you don't have to put one on your shadow. Yeah. So when the soul is taken care of, automatically the material body is taken care of in the best possible way. But what Nanda Saraswati says, treat your senses roughly. Yeah, the body, you know, you don't want to pamper it, but you want to make it work. And then it feels happy. It feels, it's like a donkey, you know. It feels good. I'm working stuff. Am I bad? You know, it's okay. It's taken care of. Not to the point of being made into some god, but a healthy, healthy, happy life automatically follows from a spiritual life.
Yeah. Some people who give the argument that if they see, for example, a person suffering physically,
yeah,
they look at the he's also Krishna's son,
yeah,
and then they try to help him materially, and maybe give him some food or clothes or something. So what would he say of that? I mean,
there was a boy. And his father and his son, they live in a very, very poor village in Korea. Very poor, way in the mountains. And somehow the son found this horse, and it had a bridle and a saddle. It was a very expensive horse, you know. He brought it home. And in that place, the law was that if nobody claimed it within 3 days, they could keep it. And so nobody claimed it. So everybody said, oh, you're so fortunate, like that. And he said, maybe. The father said, maybe. So 3 more days passed, and the boy was showing off, riding the horse. He didn't know what to do, and the horse threw him off. He broke his leg. No doctors, everything else. Everybody knows this boy is going to be crippled his whole life, have to walk with a stick. So people told the father, you're so unfortunate. He said, maybe. So 3 more days passed, and the emperor's captain came through and captured all the young men in the village and took them off in chains to fight in a foreign war. And everybody knew they would never see their sons ever again. But one boy couldn't go because he had a broken leg. So he was the only man in the whole village with a son. Everybody said, you're so fortunate. He said, maybe. So what is it benefiting the body? We don't know. Sometimes the most horrible thing is the best thing that could happen. The Bhagavad Gita says, the happiness, the action and reaction are created by material nature, but the happiness and distress is created by the living entity. Yeah. So we don't know. We can't. The only real value is in terms of the soul. And sometimes it's the greatest thing if somebody has a broken leg. You know, next day it turns out to be the greatest thing that ever happened to them. I mean, so many people in these airplanes that crash, they always interview the people who missed the flight. There's like maybe 5 people, 10 people, they didn't miss their flight. And they said, the guy said, yeah, I was caught in traffic, and I was just so angry, you know. But, oh, God, I missed the flight. Wow. You know? So you don't know. Oh my God, I caught my flight. Oh, how nice. Yeah. Oh yeah. Planes start shaking. Yeah. So that's our point. Is without the perspective of the spirit soul, there is no benefit. Now maybe indirect, you know, we should try and be in the mode of goodness because ultimately that will cause benefit for the soul. There may not be a specific point like that. And the Uttamadhikari, he probably said kind of promised saying that one example that basically even a Brahmin, right? As I mentioned, as we write this, our association is the devotees and guests in the temple of Santiago, Chile. We lecture once a day in the evening. There are always about 50 or 60 devotees. Temple room, patio, or cool. Last night we finished these Upanishad texts 6 and 7. Many repeat students and also new people, so we had to make a summary for the new folks and go ahead for the old ones. It should be old then. So many times like that, you have an audience of a lot of variety of people. You have very advanced devotees, you have Madhya Madhikars, you have some guests, you have some atheists. So many times when you're preaching, you have to figure out like how to, you know, Prithu Maharaj, what he did was he just ignored the envious people, just ignored them like that. And so you have to, many times, preaching, be able to adjust to different people and give a review and not bore the advanced devotees. So here's a review we gave. Isa Upanishad 1 through 3 seem to talk about the same thing as Nectar of Instruction, text number 2. God has a plan, take your share, and engage in spiritual life. Isa Upanishad 4 and 5 talk about God as Paramatma, physically related to His creation. 6 and 7 talks about His relationship to the Jiva soul in His creation, and the results of seeing Him in this way. Text number 8 emphasizes we must know the Paramatma feature again. Then 9 to 14 contrast again knowledge and worship of the spiritual and material worlds, culminating in going back to the spiritual world as we really know the Ishvara. Okay, you need to point out more. Text 7. This text 7 is just like number 6. No. The first two lines of each text are almost identical. We have to see Krishna and all the living beings. Then text 6, we won't hate anybody. Text 7, we won't have any fear or anxiety of anybody. Fear or anxiety. Pretty nice goal, eh? You aren't afraid that your right hand will try to attack your left hand. You're not watching. You know, we see somebody sitting there and he's talking like that, and his hand is like, you know, bison, this and that. this guy's completely nuts. Madman. But the Uttamadhikari, when he sees people not trusting each other or afraid of somebody else or this or that, he sees the same thing. He sees that these people are mad. They're completely insane, you know? Because everybody is different hand of Krishna. And even when Krishna gives him free will to do different things like that, you know, to lord it over artificially, he makes sure that the demons are fighting with the demons. Like that. You know, the ones who want to be punished are being punished by those who want to punish. After hurting people for enough, you want to be hurt. This is the thing, it's all duality. There's nothing here but duality, you know. So after being in heaven and enjoying like anything for a while, you want to go to hell. Because in hell you get reformed, you know, so you can come back out and enjoy again. You know, it's like Yamaraj's body shop. He goes through his frame stretcher, fixes the thing, and finally you come back out, you know, out of hell. So that way hell is good. You go into hell completely, no pious credits, nothing. Yamaraj has an unlimited number of planets under his jurisdiction like that. To straighten you out. And when you come out, yeah, you're fit to live on the earth again. You know? So from that point of view, it's not bad. The people actually enjoy it. The prophet says, even in hell, there are hellish pleasures. Doing hell, hellish pleasures. The prophet said, actually, if this impersonal idea is true, I'd rather be in hell, because at least there's sense gratification in hell. You know? Yeah. So it's all pornam, right? And so, what is it here? Yeah. So this is a very wonderful thing if we can come to this vision of seeing everybody connected. The tsunamis. You know, one man actually had a picture of the tsunami. He had some rubber, he had his camera going, right? you know, taking a picture of the ocean, and all of a sudden all the water just kind of went away like that. He's filming it, and it comes back on this giant wave. At some point, the guy realizes even though he was on a hill, he wasn't on a high enough hill, so he dropped the camera, and the camera was dragging and running like that. The camera survived, you know. But Prabhupada, what if Adam Bomb came? If I said, oh, I would say, oh, Krishna is coming to me as the Adam Bomb, like that, you know. But that's Brahma Bhuta Prasanama Na Sochati Na Kanchati Sama Sarvesha Bhuteshu. Yeah, so then you can become Uttamadhikari. Many people quote that as a conclusion, but this is the beginning. The beginning. Yeah. In both texts, Prabhupada explains that this vision is only possible for the Uttamadhikari, Uttamadhikari. In text 7, the controlling phrase seems to be Ekatvam, oneness with Isha. Prabhupada gives so many analogies in this purport to say that Ekatvam means oneness of purpose, not that I become God. Drop of seawater in the sea, father and his children, sparks in the fire. Paragraph six, I've highlighted that. The Param Brahma is as much a person as the individual living entities. End quote. This is so striking. Just like I know Guru Ratha Das or Jani Vas Das, they are people. So Krishna is a person with all the qualities, anxieties, funny surprises that we get. But he is different than we are also. But primarily he is a person. For example, when Lord Varaha was taking the earth out of the Garbhodak ocean, you know, he thought he looked really good. If you see pigs in Vrindavan, places like that, they're like people with high-heeled shoes. They have this thing on the back like that. They look like somebody who likes to eat crab and, you know, and caviar and drink cognac and buy with money. They look really, you know, good like that. Especially a boar. Boars are really big. Like a boar can be from here to where the pillar is like that. You know, they're tough. It's finished. Boars are dangerous. It's a famous English picture called The Boar Hunt. And it would go, you know, boar was eating corn, so the farmers went out with their lances, and maybe 12 dogs, and they came back with three dogs in their arms, and stitch them up, and two dogs dead. And it shows the boar with one dog in his thing. Because their tusks are razor sharp. You got a razor like this, dogs just cut them in half, like that. So this is Lord Varaha. He was a boar. He was like, so he was feeling really good like that. So when he was lifting the earth out of the water, Hiranyaksha said, "Stop, O amphibious beast!" Like that. He said Lord Varaha was insulted by that. He said, "What do you mean like that? You know, amphibious beast?" You know, that. So he responded by saying, "Yes, true it is that we are beasts of the forests, and we are used to killing dogs like you." So they exchange these insults back and forth, and for some time they sort of fighting, you know. It was a very, bellicose, something funny. I think it's like a funny incarnation, really, you know. God is a giant red pig with a stick, you know. So he has these feelings. Actually, also in terms of Jada Bharat, I was saying that he actually felt insulted and this and that. So they're real. They have feelings. Krishna's a person. When you insult him, he actually feels, you know, what's the word? Like, you know, upset by this. You know, and when you praise him, something like he actually feels like, you know. But when we're doing it, it's with full knowledge. It's with full freedom. And so it actually means something like that. It's like a little child brings you something. Oh, there's these pretty flowers over there. I found this one. You say, well, thank you, like that. You know, it's one little flower, but she says, well, thank you. You know. So Krishna the same way. And then if your mother tells the little child, oh, daddy likes these flowers a lot, you bring them over, you say, oh, thank you very much, I like these flowers, you know. He says, I know. How did you find out? Oh, my mommy told me. Oh, yeah, I thought so. So that's us and Radharani. Radharani then allows our little potency to become something very important and very significant like that. So he has all these qualities that we have, right? Let's go back to text then. Where are we? Number 7. Okay, we're on schedule. We've got two more. Yasmin Saravani Bhutani Atmai Vahut Vijanatava Tatra kopa ka shoka
eka tama.
So two moha and shoka. What is moha? What is shoka? Distress. Yeah. So there's no moha and shoka for him. Yeah. Except for the Madhyamadhikari and the Uttamadhikari discussed above. The Uttamadhikari was discussed above. No one can correctly see the spiritual position of a living being. The living entities are qualitatively one with the Supreme Lord, just as sparks of a fire are qualitatively one with the fire. Yet sparks are not fire as far as quantity is concerned. For the quantity of five... Yet sparks are brilliant. For the quantity of the heat and light present in the spark is not equal to that of the fire. The Mahabhagavata, the great devotee, sees oneness in the sense that he sees everything as the energy of the Supreme Lord. Since there is no difference between the energy and the energetic, there is a sense of oneness. Although from the analytical point of view, heat and light are different from fire. Yeah. And there is no meaning... There is no meaning to the word fire without heat and light. In synthesis, therefore, heat, light, and fire are the same. In this matter, the word ekasvam adipashyataha indicates that one should see the unity of all living entities from this viewpoint of revealed scriptures. The living individual sparks of the Supreme Lord possess almost 80%. What is the actual accurate amount?
79.
78. Yeah. I thought that we could be 78% as powerful as God. It didn't make any sense. But how many qualities does Krishna have, roughly speaking?
64.
How many can we have?
50. Except 50.
Yeah. And so 50 is 78% of 64. But they are not quantitatively equal to the Supreme Lord. These qualities are present in minute quantity. It probably gives the example of the drop of salt. A drop of seawater has the same quality of salt. It's the whole ocean. Yeah. And so the Pope goes on talking again about the citizens and then the kingdom and everything else like that. So trying to make, because, again, it's very, very easy for an intellectual gyani guy to take ekatvam as meaning we become that. What is Shankaracharya's basic thing? Basic phrase? Yeah, tatvam asi. Tatvam asi. Yeah. And so that's the same thing here, ekatvam. You know, one quality, tatvam asmi, you know, the same quality. But apparently even the context where that comes from, it comes from one section, I don't know, one Upanishad or something. It's saying that you are that, you know, you are the same quality as that. You are the same quality as God. But Shankaracharya is taking it to indicate, no, you are God. You are God. You are Brahman. You're the same quality as Brahman. So Prabhupada again here, it seems more like these are directed towards intellectual jnani guys. Maybe some of us have these doubts. You know, so it's directed to us. Yeah. So most of this is very easy reading, you know, for a devotee. You already know all these things. No new concepts. Yeah. I read everything. I used my notes and read everything. It was pretty easy to read everything. You know, it's like a logical reading one day. Okay, what else? Yeah. Paragraph 3, the spiritual entities are meant for enjoyment. Yeah. Okay, so now here is how the oneness comes up. We're all sat. Okay, we all exist. You know, matter doesn't exist. We're all chit. We're all conscious. Right? Nityo, nityanam, chetanam, chetanam, eko, bhavanam, yogiti, kaman. Okay, so here ananda is where the real oneness comes. Right? Because we're not all one in ananda in one sense. How is pleasure perceived?
Clearly?
Reciprocation. Huh?
Interaction.
Yeah. How do we perceive pleasure?
Senses. Minus through exchanges between others and ourselves.
By Krishna enjoying. And so unless Krishna enjoys, we don't feel any satisfaction. Yeah, we can experience his pleasure through our different you know, through our spiritual mind and senses like that. When, you know, again, I'll give you an example. When Prabhupada came to San Francisco, many people came to see him there, like that, different people. And one person was a yogi, one Desai. He was a nice person, he was 35, and he was teaching yoga to different people and asanas, a vegetarian diet. And he was a nice person, you know. He brought about maybe about like 12 students to meet Prabhupada. He's a very nice yogi, very senior Vaishnava coming, like, come with me, we'll all go meet him. So he came there, and Prabhupada was very polite with him. And Prabhupada didn't push him beyond his level. Prabhupada seeing what their level was. He didn't say, you should all shave up and move in. He was talking to them. And asking what they were doing, and was very respectful to seeing his students. So Prabhupada said, oh, so Yogi Desai, do you chant kirtan? They said, yes, we do some chanting and mantras together, Prabhupada. He said, do you chant Maha Mantra also? He said, Prabhupada, yes, we also chant the Maha Mantra also. And Prabhupada said, no, you must chant it the most. You must do what I say. I'm older than you. So Yogi laughed and said, yes, Prabhupada, we'll do that. You know? So he won his heart. And from then on, okay, we have to do this because Prabhupada's older than me. You know? So he established a personal relationship. And by that, got across the concept and everything else. So then the yogi was leaving, and his followers were leaving, you know, Westerners. So one of the boys, he told me this, he actually visited the temple about 3 years later. And he told me that actually, yeah, he was the last person to leave. You know, Prabhupada was sitting here in his chair, and there was Brahmananda and the window, you know, Brahmananda Das Maharaj. And so this boy said he was standing next to Prabhupada. He had this desire just to touch Prabhupada. It was just like this desire, you know. So he started to reach to touch him, and Prabhupada was looking out the window, so he didn't see it. But he said this big man next to Prabhupada was Brahmananda. And Brahmananda was a university wrestler, like that. So he said he started to touch Prabhupada. He's this big man. He started to his neck started to come out. He started to become, you know, like this. You know, and he said it was frightening. You know, this guy wasn't very big. You know? And he said, but he had this compulsion to touch Prabhupada. So he started to go closer to Prabhupada. And Brahmananda started getting more and more, like, you know, aggressive, like he was going to jump over Prabhupada and twist the guy's head off or something, you know. But he had this compulsion. See, funny, he touched Prabhupada, and Prabhupada turned and smiled like that, you know, and stuff. And then Brahmananda went like... you know, and it was, you know, like the dog, you know, like the dog. Love my master, love me. Just like, it was just this... He was so connected to Prabhupada's sense of happiness and acceptance or rejection that whatever Prabhupada was happy, it's okay. He was happy. So that's the right scene with Prabhupada. Oh yeah, pleasure. Yeah. The sense of oneness is not just that we're all sat, not just that we're, you know, all part of the Virat Roop, right? But that the sense of oneness is that Krishna is the enjoyer. And Prabhupada gives us an example. That when everybody tries to enjoy individually, there's going to be conflict. But when everybody tries to arrange for Krishna's enjoyment, right, then everybody's in harmony. The stomach is happy, the hands are happy, the eyes are happy. Everybody gets nutrition like that, you know. So the only person that can see this is a devotee who's trying to please Krishna, and Krishna exclusively. And then you can see how everybody can be engaged properly in this harmony, and there's oneness. You know, the insects are happy, the flies are happy, the boars are happy, everybody's happy, everybody's, you know, enjoying. Actually, even the deer when they're being eaten, right? But the tigers are happy. Because the tigers have to eat meat, pretty much, things like that. If cats don't eat meat, they go blind or something like that. When they're growing up, it's not like an option for them. Cats can't be vegetarian. Like rakshasas, right? Rakshasas, they have to eat people. Okay. So, any questions, comments? When you read these things, you know, write down your notes, your ideas, right? What you're thinking about. Ekatvam, it's only possible with Yasmananda. So this point, Brittany Prabhupada makes this point here, that this godless civilization will always result in conflict. that all ego become the point where we're all trying to serve Krishna. And the thing is, it doesn't have to be, if there's an emperor like Maharaj Pariksit, controlling the world, and even though there are demons and everything else, because he's in control, then there are certain limits, what they can do and things like that. When the kshatriyas are managing the forest, the tigers becoming too aggressive and everything else, they kill some of the tigers, like that and stuff. So that way, even though nobody's serving Krishna directly because they're under the control, then there's a certain level of harmony, a certain level of oneness, because there's a devotee in control of things like that. And the devotee should be, a king should be advised by pure devotee Brahmins who can tell him how to work with like that. Okay. So how does the Madhya Madhikarya see this? Prabhupada's expanding to the Madhya Madhikarya too. How does he see these things? The Kanista Adhikaris, can they see this oneness?
No.
What happens with them? Let's take Osama bin Laden here. Behind every good man is a good woman, right? So who's behind bin Laden? It was sociology. His wife. It's several wives. By the energy you can see. You look at this guy, probably he's doing this because his women folk are not satisfied with being, queens of a third world country. They're pushing him. Because a guy by himself, just Ramacharya, he wants to know this and that, but you only this passion for honor, power, prestige, war, feeling only can come because there's a combination of the male and female, like that. So we become, Prabhupada says, in the instructions of Bhishma Devi this year, women, as a source of inspiration for men, are more powerful than men. And therefore, such powerful women must learn to control themselves by chastity and shyness. Like that. It's a whole science then. Then we begin to see why things are happening, what's happening. Like that. Okay, so he's got these being influenced by women. Is he a Kanista Adhikari, Madhya Madhikari, or Uttama Adhikari? Huh? Is he no Adhikari? I was thinking Kanista Adhikari. When the towers were currently were collapsing, he said, Allah Akbar. So what does Upadesha Amrita say? Right? If you hear a person one time say the name of Krishna, he's the best of all these people like that. You hit your hand, you're hammering away on a nail, you hit your finger and you say, oh God damn it! In English you say that. Adi Bhagavan. Somebody else won't say that, they'll say, oh. No. So that Kanista Adhikari, the name of God will appear. He's taking shelter of God to get free from distress. Right? That's Nama Bas. He may not be offensive to the name of God, but he's using it to indicate something else. Yes, it's not it's a box. It's that before the sun comes up, there's a light. And the snakes go away, the thieves go away. So not even at Namabas stage, before the name is actually there, it can give you liberation. Like that. So if you say, oh God damn it, you'll think of God, you'll come out of this bodily concept of your finger like that. It's so intense. So, when Elijah says the name of God, Allah, we take him as, Prabhupada says, nectar of destruction, the Kanista Adhikaris can be entangled with illicit sex, they can be taking intoxication, all these things. But still, somehow or other, they're approaching God. But he distinguishes two kinds of Kanista Adhikaris there. You got that? One are those Kanista Adhikaris who are simply innocent, they haven't heard about anything higher. And so we should preach to them. We should favor them, do the austerity of approaching them, give them information from the scriptures or from the spiritual master. And that's potent. Sometimes they won't accept your realizations or your ideas. But if you're quoting Prabhupada or quoting the scriptures, they accept it. Other kind of Kanista Adhikari doesn't want to advance. He wants to stick with his nose in the stool up to here, like that. Swimming around, eating all the garbage and everything else, like the pigs. To keep his nose out of the water. But every now and again a wave comes, and they get covered. So that's they want to worship God just enough for liberation. For liberation, like that. When there's a problem, they go to God, but as soon as the problems are over, they forget it. that. Yeah. So Bin Laden, I would say, analysis, he's a, if you go to him on the basis of the Quran, you say, look, you know, there's this and that, he becomes convinced, and he says, yes, you're right. This is not what Allah wants. He says, oh, what a thing I've done. Then he becomes like a Mahdi Madakar, and he starts preaching to people, I made many mistakes, I've done wrong things in the name of Allah. Now you don't do that. All you people change. You act properly. This is what Allah wants. Could do a lot of work, huh? And if he started doing that, imagine what would happen. You know, so many people would change. Wow, you changed. Well, I should think about it too, you know, like that. So he analyzing people, you know, we got Vikarmis, Karmis, Gyanis, Vimukti Gyanis, Sadhana Bhaktas, Prema Bhaktas, Raja Bhaktas, Gopi Bhaktas, and Radha. It's text number 10, right, in Upadeshamrita. And we deal differently with different people like that. Okay. So then Madhyamadakari, how does he see this oneness? Does he see everybody as connected to Krishna, part and parcel of Krishna?
He sees atheists.
Bhagavad Gita 18 chapter says this, that he sees, I think there is more passion is mentioned, but he sees different bodies, different living entities in different bodies.
Yes, the mode of passion. So devotee, the original service can also be the mode of ignorance, the mode of passion, the mode of goodness. So Kanista Adhikari can see these things by using his intelligence. You know, depending on his level, because you're high, sorry, Madhyama Adhikari. They're very high Madhyama Adhikaris, and they're very low Madhyama Adhikaris. There's a whole variety in there like that. So you've got to figure out what you're on. Some people have just taken initiation, they're just beginning to worship the deity, and some people are almost, they're starting to experience Baba, you know, like that. Uttama Adhikari begins the level of Baba. So he's Nishta, he's Ruchi, still Madhyama Adhikari. That, you know? So he can use his intelligence. He can see, like, okay, let's see what's going on here, and yeah, these people can all serve Krishna. He uses his intelligence. His intelligence is very purified. Prabhupada says when the intelligence is purified, practically speaking, we're on the spiritual platform. Then it's a very subtle thing in terms of some intense esoteric thing, me and Krishna, which the spiritual master has to take you. Come on, you got to go back to Krishna and apologize. Oh, no, I can't do it. Come on, I'll go with you. It's okay. Yeah, I won't leave you. Okay. No, because we're so embarrassed. But we did. But before that, intelligence is becoming purified. Then we can see, yeah, everybody. You know, hey, everybody can chant Hare Krishna and sing and take prasada. So he sees everybody is the same. Everybody can follow this process. You know? One guy came to our temple in San Francisco. He was an imbecile. These are, in psychology, these are technical things. Like it's normal, below average, subnormal. I think everyone's going to say it's a moron, an imbecile. One is lower than the other, like that. Moron or an imbecile. He was really mentally retarded. And he slept with his mother until he was 12 years old or something like that. So real, like emotional, those bombs, you know. So somebody came, you know, and we didn't chase him away or anything. He'd sit there in the class and take a song. And after about 1 month, he started going side by side, side to side during the kirtans and clapping his hands like that. You know? But you could see he was making progress. And the doctors hadn't been able to help him. But he was just beginning to figure out like that. You know? So Madhyama Adhikari, you expect to see, yeah, everybody can take to this process. You know? Like that. So Madhyama Adhikari has to use his intelligence to analyze things and think about them and calm down his own attachments, you know. Hey, here's some really nice organic vegetables and everything else. So, no, hey, don't think about eating boga. Your intelligence tells you. Think about how these can be offered to the deities and everything else. Okay, yeah, okay. So all this can be used for Krishna. Right? All these different vegetables. I don't like this vegetable, but Krishna likes it. Okay, yeah. Yeah. So Madhyama Adhikari means he's a pure devotee. If he uses his intelligence. Can he start out with Madhikari means he's a pure devotee spontaneously? Mm-hmm. One, yeah.
Means Madhyama Adhikari, whenever he uses the intelligence, then he's right.
Yeah. And when he forgets to use his intelligence, then he can deviate. You know? But then his intelligence will pull him back, or Krishna through the intelligence will tell him, hey, wake up. And he'll go, oh, yeah. And he'll apologize and get back on the path again. Prabhupada says there are first, second, and third class pure devotees. He says, actually, the third class devotees are not really pure devotees. You know. But he also says in some places else here too, the same thing's the same point. I read it here. But yeah, like, these are intelligence, we can remain pure. Okay? So then, you know, somebody asked you, are all your ISKCON gurus, are they pure devotees? Well, they're first and second and even third class pure devotees, like that. So somebody can be a Madhyama Adhikari. Prabhupada says, Upadeshamrita, Kanista and Madhyama Adhikari can both accept disciples. It's the very last paragraph to text number 5. They can both accept disciples, but you know, if all you have is a Kanista or a Madhyama Adhikari teacher, you won't go beyond his level of comprehension. So therefore, one should accept an Uttama Adhikari as a guru. This is exactly what was going on before Prabhupada left. Different devotees, Hansa Duda, Bhagavan, they were taking people as their disciples, training them, and being very authoritative with them. And Prabhupada endorsed that. But yeah, if they get too far out, then you can always come to me. If you think there's some very much problem with Hansa Duda or acting improperly, then alright, you can come to me. But don't come to me out of envy, trying to jump over him. One devotee who was president in London, and Pranishama Sundar was using money for different things, things like that. So he went with Vibhathinanda Swami to talk to Prabhupada about it. But apparently he had some fair amount of envy towards him, you know. So he started describing what he was doing, the wrong things he was doing. Vibhathinanda, he said that Prabhupada turned to Vibhathinanda Swami and said, tell him to leave now. And Prabhupada wouldn't even talk to him. So Vibhathinanda Swami said, well, Prabhupada wants you to leave, you know. She was, you know, burned, you know. So he got out, and he was thinking about it, and said, yeah, I had envy towards him, and Prabhupada picked it up on it. And Vibhathinanda Swami said, after he left, Prabhupada said, okay, tell me what Chapa Singh is doing, like that. Because he's not envious, you know, like that, you know. So Kanista Adhikari, he has these different envy and things like that there, you know, Madhyama Adhikari. So you can go, and you know, we take initiation from somebody in ISKCON, and we should respect and act properly. We understand he's on the Madhyama Adhikari level. He tells us, I'm not this nishta, this and that, okay. Initiation, studying. And Prabhupada is the founder acharya. That's his position. He's the founder acharya. And if I see my Madhyama Adhikari guru has a certain problem with this and that, then I can go to Prabhupada's books and then approach him and say, Maharaj, or, you know, Adhikari. But Prabhupada says this and this here, and it seems like that. And Madhyama Adhikari most likely will say, you're right. You know, so, Prabhupada, thank you. Okay, I'll correct myself. Yeah. Madhyama Adhikari will keep doing it. So, but if we go to try and jump over somebody, anybody, you know, and then to go to Prabhupada, then Prabhupada's not happy with that. Yeah. But his necessity, yeah, his necessity to go to him, he's always there. He's the founder of Charya. He makes the fundamentals, and he's the person who's guiding us like that. If there's any problem, anybody can go to him like that. Yeah. And if he may say, well, I don't know, let's go to Bhakti Siddhanta. Happened to be one time, I was with the Artik, doing Artik, and on the altar, I offered to Prabhupada first. You know, Prabhupada was smiling. The picture was like, Prabhupada was very happy, you know. So my mind says, well, Prabhupada, why are you smiling? You know, I said, oh, because Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati wants to talk to you. You know, and it was just, you know, this reaction in my mind, everything else. And I was like, oh my God, I have to offer the lamp to Bhakti Siddhanta's picture next. Bhakti Siddhanta was looking at me like, you know, like laser cannon vision, you know. It was like, you're doing okay, stupid white guy. It's like, you know, for a stupid Lecha Yagna, said, you're doing okay. You're doing okay. Just stick with Prabhupada.
I'm sure I will.
So we have to have this experience of parampara. Prabhupada mentions this many times, right? It has to come through disciplic succession. And disciplic succession has to be alive. You know, everybody sees the moon, but you want to see the details, okay? So you got a telescope. You've got to orient towards it properly, right? Okay. And what do you see? You see the first lens. Then you've got to line the second lens up so it sees the second lens. That's why the line of the first lens up, so you see the second lens, so sees the third one, so sees the fourth one, compound telescope. So that way, we don't see Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, we don't see Krishna, we can see him externally. We see Prabhupada. If you look at Prabhupada, what do you see? Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. And that's the test. That, you know, the only thing a guru has to offer you is his guru. And then his guru, the only thing he has to offer you is. So we go with Prabhupada, we begin to see this, and finally you come to Narottam Das Thakur. And when you're singing Narottam's songs, you can actually see what he's thinking, experience these things like that. And it goes more and more, more and more, and more and more, and more and more, you know, more and more aligned until we can see Krishna. Prabhupada says that the experience is through the parampara, you know, but it's direct. It's a direct experience. If you wear glasses, you see the world directly through the windows, right? You see the world directly, you get a direct experience of what's happening. But it's through a window glass. So parampara has to give you that direct experience of Krishna. And you have to do your work. Simple one, Tray Rishi said, "Oh Prabhupada, Krishna is so far away, I just want to worship you." And he probably became a little angry and said, "That's Mayavad philosophy." Unless you see Guru as representative of Krishna, then it's Mayavad philosophy. And so you make that mistake, many people. You better see your guru as representative of Krishna, but not Krishna.
Maharaj,
yeah.
Some say Guru Brahma, Guru Vishnu, Guru Devama.
Yeah, you don't say that. It can be. In quality, it can be like that. In quality. And in function. Prabhupada says that in terms of. That's why it's very difficult to understand that. That the guru is, you know, in some ways, yeah, worship of the guru is more important than worship of God. You know, the guru is more potent than God. Yeah, because he's an empowered representative.
She's already Jaya Swami Maharaj. That mantra is nowhere to be found in the Vedas.
No, it's not. It's just it's probably somebody's invention like
Mayavati
that.
Mayavati just made it up.
Yeah. So, last text. Okay, you're the. Oh, I have no comments. So Prabhupada discusses the qualities. Oh yeah, okay, this was described in the text. Akayam ashnira ashnadiram paribhu sudam. Yeah. Also, Krishna can eat with his eyes. His body is not like ours. But we eat something. I lost it. Okay. Yeah. So, text number, what is we got here? 4 and 5. We're actually beginning to learn that. I didn't like to be Vedashamrita a long time ago. As I began to study it, I began to like and see his position like that. So texts 4 and 5 are talking about the Virata Rupa, the Paramatma. 6 and 7 then talk about the living entities as being part of that Paramatma. But now it's not just water, earth, this kind of thing, but it's living entities are also part of the Paramatma. Text number 8, we're saying, goes back. And it goes back to the general feature like that. Okay, chant together. Text number 8. Let's all chant together. Sapariyavashchukram akayam aratam asnaviram shudam apapagadam kavirmanikshi paribhusvayamur yatat takyatortan virashchashvabdivya mabhyantya. Such a person. What person is this? Such a person. Sees everybody equally like that. Yeah, or at least he's coming to that platform. Must. Such a person must factually know the greatest of all, the personality of Godhead, who is unembodied, omniscient, beyond reproach, without veins, pure and uncontaminated, the self-sufficient philosopher who has been fulfilling everyone's desires since time immemorial. Okay, you read this text. Give us a name. What does it mean, unembodied?
Not
what Prabhupada says is that when we take on a body, we come to this world, we put it on like clothes. But Krishna doesn't do that when he comes to this world. Maybe Kamadeva is like that. You know, some description in the Bhagavatam that Kamadeva is Krishna in a material body. The Prabhupada says, well, even if it is, it doesn't act material. like that. So anyway, but generally speaking, Krishna is not embodied like that. But we're embodied. You know? His body is himself. Okay, what else? Omniscient?
Omniscient.
Yeah, he knows everything. Yeah. Omniscient, omnipotent, omnivorous, omnivoracious. Beyond reproach. What does Prabhupada talk about here? You read this.
Brahma
Samhita
says that millions and millions of travel we cannot
reach. No, he's beyond reproach. Not approach, reproach.
Beyond the
sense. Huh? No. You've got to read these things. You've got to come to class.
Everywhere.
Huh?
Everywhere and everywhere.
No. Reproach.
Reproach means become angry also.
Huh?
Reproach means being angry.
No, reproach means to criticize somebody. His character is very reproachable, like that. He eats fruit in bed.
He cannot be criticized.
He's
so good.
Yeah. So what is the example Prabhupada give of how Krishna is not criticizable? He was dancing with other people's wives in the middle of nights. He was dancing with the gopis, but still people would say, oh, this is abominable. Abominable. Like that, you know. But Krishna is irreproachable. Because everything he did was all good. What else we got? He doesn't have veins. Well, let's talk about that. I'm 62 years old. I have no short-term memory. You guys have, you're all young men. Like that. So you should have read this morning, today. You should remember this. Okay, yeah.
It's a spiritual body.
Huh?
He has a spiritual body.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a material body that depends on veins or whatever.
Yeah.
All of his limbs and or whatever, all of his parts of his body can do the same work as all the others.
See, you can hear everything. Yeah. And Prabhupada says, like a machine. Our body is a machine. You know, and all these things have to function. But Krishna doesn't have a body like that. Yeah. Interesting. So he passes stool. It's like Murphy. Yeah. And he very proudly, Lord Chaitanya was foaming at the mouth. He was foaming at the mouth, and people were like, cotton candy, you spin the sugar like that to get this stuff. So he was foaming at the mouth, and those who were expert at relishing the mellows were picking it up and eating it, you know. And it probably didn't taste bad or weird, it probably was like this transcendental bliss. Yeah. Okay, what else we got? Pure and uncontaminated, same thing. The self-sufficient philosopher who has been fulfilling everyone else's desires since time immemorial. What's the Sanskrit for that? Oh, it is no Sanskrit. Oh yeah, it is, yeah. Yeah. Artam. Artam via the dot.
In the Bible translation, is said antiseptic. And the literal translation is pure and uncontaminated. So.
Bible? I think Prabhupada's repeating himself. Yeah, pure and uncontaminated, the purest
points. So, question.
Okay.
Can it be understood that he is uncontaminatable?
Oh yeah.
Physically unable to.
He's prophylactic and antiseptic. Says that. Yeah.
So he's the best purifying.
Antiseptic.
Yeah, if you want to purify something, that's Krishna.
That's antiseptic. There's two qualities to being pure. One is antiseptic, and whatever he comes in contact, he makes it pure. Like the sun, it makes anything pure. And prophylactic, what it means is actually it can't become contaminated. It prevents contamination. So Prabhupada says, by associating with Krishna, a devotee cannot be contaminated. And he also mentions here even the Madhyamadhikari. The Madhyamadhikari, he appears maybe to become in Maya, this and that, problems, but he says, no. He's paraphrasing the verse, Apichet Sudaracharo, Imajate Mama Nanyabhak, Sadareva Samantavyaha Samyadhya Vishitavya Sa. It's in all these things are nectar instruction. It's almost like their books are so parallel. But nectar instruction goes beyond this. It goes to higher things. So this is very interesting because they say, oh, your ISKCON gurus can't be pure devotees because they're falling down, they're drinking alcohol, they're doing these things like that. You know? But what does that verse say? Apiche Sudaracharo. What does Sudaracharo mean?
The most
woman. Yeah, acharo means activities, character qualities. Duracharo means bad qualities. Sudaracharo means it's abominable. So what happens? Who's doing this? Ananya Bhak. Apiche Sudaracharo Bhajatinam Ananya Bhak. It's not a bhakta. This is Ananya Bhakta. Undeviating, unflinching devotee. What happens to him? He's engaged in abominable activities. So it's possible even for a very advanced devotee, you know, to be engaged in very, very abominable activities like that. You know? But he has to be dedicated to the process. So as I remember, what Prabhupada is saying here is that this means madhyamadhikari. Tesham satata yuktanam bhambhajatam pratipurvakam. Prabhupada says that means initiated devotee. Second initiation. Like that. And of course, if you follow your first initiated vows properly, you're also second initiated without taking it formally. But it means somebody Brahman. Right? What does Brahman mean? Brahma Bhutta Prasanatma. Na sochati, na kamsati. He doesn't hang or doesn't lament. He comes to that platform like that. So it means somebody who's following the process. You see that people that they're getting up from Mangalarti, they're chanting around, they're doing their service, and some problems happen, this and that, but somehow or other, usually by bad association, they fall down. Accidental fall down. You know? One mother, Mula Prakriti. She asked Prabhupada during one darshan, she said, how can we tell if that fall down was accidental or intentional? Or with consciousness? Was accidental fall down or the devotee actually consciously did it? So Prabhupada stopped for a second and he thought and he said, if they come back, it was accidental fall down. Yeah. And they come back quickly. See, somebody has a fall down, it's within a few days, everything else, he goes through and gets his mind back in order and comes and apologizes and says, well, I don't know what happened. I was a little bit careless. I was sort of associating with some old friends, and first thing I knew, I was off smoking and doing everything else like that. Everybody, forgive me, I'm really sorry. And so it's okay, it happens, you know. Happened to me too. Okay. So that's how he's prophylactic. Because even the Madhyamadhikari, once you come to the Madhyamadhikari platform, yeah, we can engage in all these simple activities, but we're not falling down. We don't fall down from the desire to serve Krishna. That's what it means with Madhyamadhikari, Madhyamadhikari, don't fall down. They don't fall down from the desire to serve Krishna. Right? But they can fall. Maharaj Bharata was in the platform of what?
Bhava.
And it says he had an accidental fall down. But in the purport, Prabhupada says, no. It's not possible to have an accidental fall down on the level of Bhava. Upanishad says the same thing. Maya is there, but she can't influence you on the platform of Bhava, like that. So therefore his fall down was?
Intentional.
Intentional. Probably uses the word both ways like that. You know? So he intentionally, Krishna came to play with everyone. So I play with my deer, I'm too busy, like that. And so Krishna says, hey, what are you doing? Like that. Krishna kindly then, you know, and he took the chastisement like that. You know? So very quickly he was, you know, reinstalled. This is one lifetime. But he didn't fall into abominable activities. He became an animal. He became an animal. Like that. None of our ISKCON Acharyas who have fallen down have actually turned into animals by that. Ooh. Yeah, I mean, maybe some of them have like that. So yeah, you can actually even become an animal, you know, even from the platform of the bottom. But you don't experience it like an ordinary person. Like that. You go through it, but you don't experience it like an ordinary person. So that's the... So he said, you have to see this. This is the test. If you're actually on this platform, you begin to see everybody equally, you know. You don't see, hey, it's us against them. Come on, let's fight. You know, it's us against them. You know? It's the men against the women. You know? It's the dogs against the cats. Come on. You start to see everybody, nature... Oh, it's Prabhu, it's his service doing this, not my service. No, it's all Krishna's service. What can I do? Well, the sweepers will pick up the trash. Yeah. No, I can pick it up too. Yeah, like that. So you begin to see this perspective. And what's the guiding principle of the oneness? That Krishna is the enjoyer. And how is Krishna pleasing? We can see it through the parampara, by the instructions of the scriptures. We can develop a certain consciousness and attitude of the Pasha team. Or finally, when we're pure enough, we can actually see Krishna everywhere. How's it going? It's a famous verse. When Ramananda Roy saw Stavra Jankamadeki, Nadeki Tara Morti, Sarvatahoi Nicha Ista Devas Morti. Ramananda Roy saw Lord Chaitanya as Krishna and Radha and Krishna combined. And Lord Chaitanya said, oh, I'm just a Mayavadi sannyasi. Actually, a pure devotee sees everything moving and not moving, but in everything he sees is Ista Devata. So that's the final conclusion. So any final comments or questions? Okay.
Paraj, I couldn't understand the connection you made Shuddha Bhavdhan to Madhyamadhikari.
The Madhyamadhikari, because he's following the process, you know, Krishna keeps him from becoming contaminated. So, somebody may become angry and insult somebody because there's a reaction in his consciousness like that. You know, he wants to go and drink or something. Because he's Madhyamadhikari, even though he became angry like that, following the principles, everything else, sincere, then Krishna protects him. And then Krishna says, hey, we've got to go back and apologize, and gives him right intelligence, and he goes back. Where an ordinary person would just have a reaction. You know? So Krishna protects the Madhyamadhikaris too. That's what he's describing here. But, you know, he gives them a taste of what they did too. You know, so they can become Uttamadhikaris. But it's control. It's not like your karma. It's like, hey, this, watch this, what happens? So now Radharani is controlling our karma. Yeah.
Maharaj, you mentioned that the spiritual master is more potent than Krishna.
Sometimes.
In what way?
No, because, well, many examples, like, you know, Hanuman.
Yeah.
Ram had to make a bridge to cross the ocean, but Hanuman just jumped over it. And so same way with Krishna, like Nityananda, sometimes he would get, you know, mercy for people that Krishna would not give. No, it's the same way. Like that. So a spiritual master can, because he's a representative like that.
Yeah. But anyways, Krishna himself empowered?
Yeah, yeah, that's the whole thing, understand these things. It's a chanta veda veda tapa. Yeah. And, oh, well, it's just Krishna. No, it's not just Krishna. It's a spiritual master. Oh, I neglect him. He's just Krishna acting through him. No. Yeah. He is. He now at this point he is Krishna. There's no other Krishna to talk about. Yeah. But we always see with this achinta veda veda top of a vision like that. Yeah. So today is tomorrow. Yeah. Tomorrow we're going to go ahead with text number. Oh boy, tomorrow's a big one. Not 9 through 14. That's bad.
9, 10, 11.
12, 13, 14.
Wow, it says 9 to 11
here. Yeah, that's just the division. But tomorrow, if you look at page number. Look at page number 2. Yeah. Wednesday, 27 January, 9 through 11 and 12 through 14. Yeah. But we did like 4 texts today and 6 tomorrow. Yeah. This is why I was saying maybe we'll have a class on Nityananda's appearance day in the morning or something like that. You know. Yeah, I was given this challenge, teach Usha Upanishad in 4 days. So at least tomorrow, so see how it goes. At least read 9 through 11 if you can do more. But before we go, there's one more thing of seeing everybody equally. Today is Prabhu's birthday. Yes. To distribute cows and charity to everybody.
In that context, what is the name better? And what is the level? really not something like that. But I was thinking that if that term was why alcohol addiction was sin, how was alcohol addiction a sin? Of course, it takes away
the sin left is ignorance. And why is it? Somebody would make a stupid law. Because it allows us to see ourselves as God. Alcohol allows us to see yourself as God.
So, for...
Because sometimes alcohol is not sin. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Please forgive me for interrupting your connection with Krishna. So, in terms of your open book assessments for Unit 6, the due date is the 1st of February. Those devotees who are doing the Bhakti Sarachar, you will be given an extension until the 4th of February. Those devotees who are doing the Bhakti Sarachar course will be given an extension to the 4th of February. Is it clear for everybody? Thank you. Very good. One more thing.
The course that for Bhakti the classes are starting
I would like to talk to you. That's some drivers. Name, time, and place.
I don't know. Right now?
Too many people around.
Sorry, Maharaj. So.
Well, thank you very much for coming.
Very
wonderful. Very amazing. Very good. That question we could understand, like that we are discussing now, that Mayavadi people, some they are speculators, they speculate wisely, and then there are people who speculate through Shastra, like limited things. Like we are discussing that 342, that they are fixed to 342, at least 1500, meaning of the text according to Nirukti, etc. So, but in that also one may misinterpret according to Shastra only.
No. But like it says, you know, Atma means something, Rava means something. So you go through and you just put it into the meaning. That's what it means. You take another combination.
So one sentence means that you serve Krishna, another sentence means that you don't serve Krishna.
Maybe, I don't know.
So then it's wrong.
No, maybe it doesn't mean that. There's only 3,000, let's say there's 35 in Vijay. None of those, every single one of those says you must serve Krishna. But this way, that way, this way, that way.
But it may also be that way.
Maybe you think that's a bona fide interpretation. You're not engaging in sentimental speculation. Sentimental speculation. There's some way it can be interpreted. So we accept that. But then we have to look to the context, other statements, people to clarify things like that. That's what spiritual master does. He only gives more evidence from different angles. Say, well, I've been thinking it over. It seems to me that maybe it could be this. For example, here, Papa talks about this, That's why, it's also good to have Madhukari Guru as sections. Sections would help you to understand the scriptures. Somebody gives us Prabhupada's book, okay? And somebody else can help us read it. Help us read Prabhupada's books. right? Somebody gives us a book, it's very nice, but somebody else can help us read it.
Yeah.
You say, yeah, yeah, but here, for example, I was reading over and over again, like, text number 5, the Prabhupada read that. And it finally came to realize that Prabhupada was saying, like, he's talking about initiation. Especially when he says spiritual initiation, he's talking about second initiation.
Yeah.
And this stuff makes a lot more sense on there. And then also, when we were in conversation, you know, he said that, you know, okay, so you know different things, and you start to help the person get, develop his own logic and stuff like that. So, but not speculating, he's just giving you more context, more references like that. So if it says you not worship Krishna, for example, then there's a
context.
There's a context. Why?
Because it doesn't like a big everything is given by Krishna only. So if you see from the whole picture, always the picture will come correct. Because then by a person. So if you see from the whole picture, always it will be
one of our life memories. He asked him, which part of Bhagavad Gita do you like the most? So, well, I like what Krishna says, do whatever you want to do. You say that in Bhagavad Gita. He shows that Krishna says, okay, now I've explained everything to you. If you don't follow my instructions, you're going to go to hell. But do what you want to do. He says that.
They mean that innocence is required. That one must be non-duplicitous while approaching Shastra, otherwise you will be given wrong things.
And even bona fide spiritual master.
Bona fide spiritual master is a person, so you can just say.
He'll give you the wrong thing. And Narada Muni, when Guru Maharaj came, he said, oh, you should go home, you're a little boy, you shouldn't do this now. But Guru Maharaj was very sincere, so he said, okay. He said, no, I won't follow your instruction. So, many times, Prabhupada would give, like, people were very persistent for some material thing. Finally, Prabhupada would say, okay, do it. The secretary would ask, Prabhupada, did you want him to do that? I said, no, of course not. If I hadn't let him, he would have become angry at me, and it would have been even worse. So sometimes, yeah. Prabhupada says that the spiritual master can give the Bhakti Lata Bija and the Kama Lata Bija. And he won't give the Kama Lata Bija for the reason. We're only going to push him, push him, push him, and finally say, okay, enjoy your senses. But yeah, of course, the spiritual master left, he will also, you know, give time off the project day.
In this context, how is it that the devotees, the sannyasis, who apparently did something wrong, what do you bring up? Why is David kind of away from his time when younger senior devotees began to understand whether they were not like transcendental platform or that they were completely engaged in Krishna's service?
As far as I know, I do some of those weapons. It's not the only one thing I can see trying to rock the egg. It's not the most important thing. It's not the most important thing. So, you know, then somebody, some friend,
No, different levels of
Mahatma.
There are different levels of Mahatma.
The Shastras say that you should find yourself an Uttama Adhikari as a spiritual master. But when there are no Uttamas, because Uttama, there are different gradations of Uttama, people do Yonu, and then there's a lecture of obstruction, so like this is also a spiritual master you can take. Prabhupada said that, you know, what is that?
I saw like a photograph, and supposedly the Bhagavad Gita had written a description of Mahatma Mahatma Guru.
He always saying
that the Bhagavad Gita was
trying to say is, on one hand, there is the Bhagavad Gita, initiate disciples. And then on the other hand, there's Tikkun Jayono, that. So there's a freedom of being
French.
Platform, but still,
no. I mean, you can come down. If he is a Madhagar, if you're sincere, it's like he is God Madhagar. He's going to be Madhagar in that mission. But he'll tell you. So you should probably I might write that. But I don't tell anybody. You cannot do this. Don't read Prabhupada's books. Only read my books. Okay? You can understand Prabhupada. That was one of the things why in the end you look in this but some mighty Madhagar will tell you, no, read Prabhupada's books directly. You go read them. So, to accept the Madhagar, and somebody else, my Diksha Guru, my senior tongue reader, and Madhagar, he knows it. So, you different levels. There's a Madhagar, he says, no, it means he has to come to a certain level. Basically, Bob, what do you call it?
I thought Maharaj also quoted Maharaj. He said you can, and he also used the same example from you can fall from there, from
the purport to that word says he fell down, but actually he probably said directly that it was not accidental fall. It's not possible to have an accidental fall. He fell down because of intentional. He fell down because of consciously committing offenses to Krishna.
Then I didn't understand what you said.
Yeah.
So, if you fall down from a bar platform, it is because you do it consciously. But I heard also about it. He said Maya was aiming. Maya was really aimed. So
arrows?
Arrows, yeah. Aimed.
But actually, this is the same thing. When you come to the platform of Baba, Krishna Sriya Sam, Maya Ayanakar, Nahantaya, that Maya and Krishna are like darkness and shadow. When one comes to the Baba platform, Baba says, I no longer be influenced. Although Maya is present, can no longer be influenced.
So he did it himself.
So that any point, because he's an example. The body of time is full of examples of different things happening. Basically, the body of time is almost nothing but falling. You look at everybody's falling down. Well, why? Because that's why it's like showing that it's like diagnosing your computer. It's all full of nothing but problems. This is for diagnosing.
There they say that you accept him as a great devotee, you do not consider him his abominable activity. And you say that he gets angry because I said so. And it is an offense to think otherwise. So how do we actually understand how the devotees are thinking I am much to have fallen in such a scenario. I feel like personally, one has been really regretted. That's not what you want. Guilt and condemnation of the self would automatically. Lamentation, and more than that, I think if I would do something about it, about being a devotee, I would really condemn myself. How could I do it? So, but Krishna is saying that if you think like that, that's offensive. So I am committing an offense in regretting what I have done.
Well, no, other people shouldn't think that way about yourself. You should think that way about yourself.
Yeah.
Everybody examine. Did I make a mistake?
Yeah,
I was just a little bit, what's the word, bow, a little bit arrogant. Okay, I'm not going to do it again. So lamentation burns up the...
Lamentation
burns up the offensive reaction. You're finding all the... You find out what causes it.
Reasons.
You can punish me.
Okay. I'll start him, I'll do it.
Maharaj, this fall down is fall down from a desire to serve. If somebody is practicing and he's finding it difficult, but he's feeling that he's not able to practice, but at his level he's practicing. So that is not counted as fall down. I mean, somebody is practicing, but is
practicing.
To his capacity.
Okay. He's not able to come to the higher level.
Yeah.
So.